The Brussels again. I'm LBC's George Ike in Mansfield, where 70% of people voted to leave the EU to find out if it's a Brexit betrayal.
In other news, trapped on the cruise of death, the rat virus that's killed three people. 23 Brits are on board. Here's travel blogger Jake Rosmarin.
What's happening right now is very real for all of us here. We're not just a story. We're not just headlines. We're people.
Plus, the Royal Navy warship crisis deepens, another crippled vessel is written off, and those travellers have gamed the system again after moving in over a bank holiday weekend. We'll give you a full report. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, fears are growing of a full-scale return to hostilities after the United States and Iran traded fire around the Strait of Hormuz. Tehran has warned the US operation to try and reopen the waterway could escalate the conflict, but President Trump's warned any attacks on US ships will result on Iran being blown off the face of the earth. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks has more.
Bit of a tinderbox again in the Strait. We saw the price of oil at one point rising above $110 a barrel. No alleviation whatsoever in terms of the oil price, if that was the intention of Donald Trump's humanitarian gesture in any way. And he oscillates, as he's done in the last few hours, from saying sometimes that talks with Iran are going well, and then other times threatening them with fire and brimstone.
Sir Keir Starmer will host senior figures from policing, culture and business in Downing Street later about plans to try and eradicate anti-Semitism. The Prime Minister will call recent attacks on the Jewish community a crisis and a test of our values. Travelodge has told LBC that it's reviewing its security policy after a woman claimed that a man who'd been harassing her was given a key to her room.
I heard him say, "Oh, she's in room 260. That made me really uncomfortable. My door opens. I managed to run and shut the door on him and close it, and I was screaming."
Lucy, which isn't her real name, told us no checks were carried out by staff at the branch in York when it happened last year. It's the latest in a series of reported security lapses involving the chain. Travel Lodge has apologised and said it's made changes to its checking procedures. 149 people are still stuck on a cruise ship in the Atlantic Ocean, which has been hit by an outbreak of hantavirus. It's spread through rodent urine and droppings. Three people have died, and a passenger from the UK remains in a critical but stable condition in hospital. New figures suggest around two pubs closed each day in the first quarter of this year. The British Beer and Pub Association says they face pressure from higher taxes. The industry body is warned it equates to the loss of around 2,400 jobs. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,363. It closed down 14 on Friday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.16. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers possible on higher ground in northern Scotland, but a warm day for most, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compasso Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compasso Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compasso Market, one membership per year, participating cinemas, two standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after seven, Tuesday the 5th of May. Getting close to EU, it would seem Sir Keir Starmer's ambition, but I have to tell you, overnight reports emerging that the EU itself is pouring what's called cold water on the idea of reset talks. We'll give you all the background to that. And we're out and about in an area that was defiantly pro-Brexit. See how the news goes down there. In other news, tragedy in Leipzig. Two people killed. It seems a random attack. Clarissa Kunath is from Radio Leipzig.
He has been identified as a 33-year-old German national from Leipzig or the surrounding area. Initial assessment suggests that the individual may have been exhibited signs of mental instability.
They're at it again, allegedly. Those travellers have gamed the system, waiting for another bank holiday weekend, turning a wildlife spot into an illegal caravan site. Where is it? And what about the residents of that part of Kent who suffered a similar fate, it would appear, on the Easter holiday weekend? We'll remind you of that. We'll also remind you of the moment the Defence Secretary, John Healey, struggled to name the number of ships in the UK Navy's fleet. Speaking with me, this was in March. How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
Well, one more's gone. It's just been written off. The state of the Navy will give you the full details there. Plus, some sort of boats that can cross the channel seemingly effortlessly are the small boats. One more arrives and we'll be at around 200,000 people. Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood told LBC last month there's no single solution to the crisis.
There isn't any one single silver bullet. I wish that there were, but we are taking every measure and pulling every lever that we can to bring those numbers down.
Really? On the cusp of 200,000? It started 8 years ago? I'll give you more details on that later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Great excitement over the bank holiday weekend for some, with the front pages suggesting that Sir Keir Starmer was set for some kind of reset with the EU. Brussels telling him the British government would have to make annual payments into the European budget. Negotiators saying it could be about £1 billion a year, a condition of further access to the EU's single market. That's pretty much based on the Switzerland model, or the Swiss model. The Swiss economy, roughly a quarter of the size of the UK's, and they spend roughly 250 on euros, the equivalent of 250 million pounds, so that's how you get to 1 billion pounds. But I need to tell you, overnight, according to two different newspapers, EU officials are pouring cold water on those reset talks. But what does it mean out and about on the streets? Well, to Mansfield. Now, in the Brexit referendum some 10 years ago, Mansfield was near the top of people voting in favour of leave. LBC's reporter joins us from the mean streets of Mansfield, George Ike. Morning, George.
Morning, Nick, from sunny Mansfield. And it was here that some 71% of people voted to leave the European Union almost 10 years ago, casting their vote in that highly divisive referendum. And we've now heard that Keir Starmer's been told it'll cost around £1 billion a year to get close to Brussels again, or reset UK-EU relations, as the government's describing it. And over the weekend, the Prime Minister explained why it's important for the UK to be closely aligned with the EU facing threats from the West.
We cannot deny that some of the alliances that we have come to rely on are not in the place we would want them to be. There is more tension in the alliances than there should be. And it's very important that we therefore face up to this as a group of countries together.
So with that price tag in mind and the high number of votes for leaving the European Union, I've been speaking to people here this morning about how they would feel about that.
We came out to be independent, and basically to pay that back. We're paying enough tax as it is, and inflation and everything. I think basically we don't need to pay it back. It's ours. That's what we came out the EU for.
Would you feel that was a betrayal of Brexit?
Yes. Yes, I would. Yes, yeah.
I voted to stay in Brexit because of the free travel. But I think it's a big farce, basically. I think Starmer's trying to buy it back into Brexit. Shouldn't have left in the first place, but then they've decided to try and get back in that way.
Now, this figure is based on a Switzerland model, but it's been scaled up to reflect the economy of the United Kingdom. And that £1 billion would go towards a fund designed to reduce economic, social and territorial disparities across the bloc, and also help give funds to Ukraine. Very simply put, Nick, this is essentially like a build your own breakfast, where you pick the ingredients you do and don't want, with the EU saying you want to be out, that's fine, but if you want to tap into certain parts of the union, then you have to pay for the bits that you do want. want. And this deal is expected to be hashed out at a UK-EU summit this summer, albeit the EU now, as you say, pouring cold water on that story and saying it's not quite the case. And whilst this has been heavily criticised as a betrayal of that vote 10 years ago by Brexiteers, others say that the cost of the payment could potentially be well offset by UK defence jobs and contracts that could come to the UK. But the message here in Mansfield, though, is very clear. It's something of a farce.
George Icke reporting from Mansfield. Let's put some of George's points to Professor Catherine Barnard, Professor of EU Law at the University of Cambridge and a fellow at UK in a Changing Europe, and always good to have you on board. So it's almost a sort of pick and mix from a breakfast buffet. Professor, is it worth the expense and what would it actually provide for? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Well, pick and mix, or other people call it pay as you play. And so essentially you pay for what you contribute and what you get out of it. Is it worth it? Well, this is largely a political decision. Yes, there's some economic elements to it. It's a political decision. Keir Starmer would say, look, in my manifesto, I said I was going to get closer to the EU, and that's what I'm trying to do. Of course, what we've seen since the last election is that the international winds have got a whole lot colder, and it's pretty cold being on the outside. And so Keir Starmer says we need to tether ourselves to a big trading bloc, and that is the EU.
How important is it for Switzerland?
Hugely important for Switzerland. I mean, their geography is such that they're surrounded by EU states. They've always been much closer than we have. In fact, Switzerland's, have got a very good deal. They've got about 120 separate agreements, which the EU doesn't like, but they recently renegotiated their deals and actually, I think, have done actually pretty well out of it. The problem for Switzerland is that it's all got to go to a referendum this summer, and it may be that the Swiss people don't like the look of what they've got. So although we talk about, look, the Swiss have done very well, in fact, Swiss people might not agree.
How is a price to be determined, and how can both parties ensure that price seems fair?
So Switzerland pay about 345 million into the EU Cohesion Fund, which, as your reporter explained, is the fund that's used to help the states, the poorer states in the EU, and with a view to the fact that Ukraine will join the EU at some stage, and that will be a huge cost for the EU. Other thing to note, at the moment the EU is negotiating its multi-annual financial framework, the MAF, and the fact is that costs have gone up, the commitments to the EU are significantly higher, and so the EU is looking behind the back of every sofa to try and get the maximum money it can get.
If Britain goes as part of the Ukraine loan scheme, what influence might that have one way or the other as regards a deal to be done?
Well, it will send a good message that the UK wants to cooperate with the EU, and obviously, as your reporter said, it would be good for business, particularly the defence industry in the UK. But we've tried this once before. We tried to join SAFE, which is another defence loan scheme, and there the price tag was set so high, I mean, eye-wateringly high at £6 billion, and the UK said, we're not playing this game.
Lastly, can we get a sense of how Sir Keir Starmer is viewed within the EU? Clearly, we're in a better place than we were with former Prime Minister Boris Johnson and others, potentially, but how warm is the relationship that we can pick up, Professor?
Yeah, it's warmer than it was, certainly with his predecessors who were regularly lobbing bricks at the EU. Keir Starmer's gone out of his way to show that the UK is much more friendly to the EU. But the EU reads, the officials in the EU read British newspapers too. They know that he's in a weak political position domestically. Internationally, he's regarded much better. But I think there's been disappointment on the EU side that actually the UK have been seem to be dragging feet over getting into a closer relationship with the EU.
Always grateful for all your input, Professor. Thank you. Catherine Barnard, Professor of EU Law at the University of Cambridge and a fellow at UK in a Changing Europe. So is it a sellout or with the expense? And we are not going to redo the Brexit debate, OK? Other people will do that for you. We are not going to do that. But we are going to look at whether this is actually a policy, because let's face it, I'm going to share with you some figures, newspapers, both the Daily Telegraph and the Daily Mirror run stories, and when you consider which side of the political spectrum the Telegraph is and which side of the spectrum the Daily Mirror is, for the two sets of headlines to be so devastating to Starmer, is this a policy he needs? Malcolm in Wigan. Malcolm, your reaction to what you've heard from my reporter and the Professor. Good morning.
Well, my reaction, firstly, is that as far as I recall, the Labour Party manifesto clearly states that Britain will not rejoin the single market or the customs union.
Right.
So if Starmer is trying to wheedle his way or trying to get or trying to persuade us to wheedle our way back into paying more dues to the club, i.e. the EU club, that he's been lying to the British people vis-a-vis the manifesto. And as such, really, he needs to consider his position, because obviously you've just mentioned there are more and more backbench MPs who want to topple him, and he's in an extraordinarily weak position. Now, as far as the Ukraine loan scheme is concerned, I do have to point out that billions and billions and billions have been thrown at, as I describe him, and indeed he is, a former TV comedian. And yet, despite all that massive...
You're talking about the Ukrainian president, just to clarify, yes? Zelensky.
Yeah.
Just so everyone knows. Yep.
Huge amounts
it's early
of
in the morning for a lot of people. They're just getting up, so I'm here to help. Yes, on you go, sir.
So, what I'm basically saying is that you can throw billions at Zelensky, but that doesn't alter the fundamental corrupt nature of his regime, and indeed his own personality.
Well, I don't know that we can start saying he's corrupt. I think we've gone as far as we can. Malcolm, I can get your fervent opposition to any attempt to get alongside the EU. I think many other people would feel the same way. Malcolm, you have yourself a good day. Coming back home after the news.
Another so-called bank holiday land grab, this time causing fury amongst locals in Essex. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma in Willows Green with the story.
Just turned 7:16, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Concerns are growing of a full-scale return to hostilities after the United States and Iran traded fire around the Strait of Hormuz. Sir Keir Starmer will bring together leaders from policing, business and higher education later in an effort to counter anti-Semitism. And 149 people are still stuck on a cruise ship in the Atlantic Ocean, which has been hit by an outbreak of hantavirus. LBC weather, a mix of sunshine and showers across the UK. Some wintry showers possible in northern Scotland on higher ground. Warm for most, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, Gatwick Express services aren't running between Gatwick Airport and Brighton, and Thameslink and Southern are suspended between Haywards Heath and Three Bridges because of an ongoing investigation. Southern services also can't run between Watford Junction and Shepherd's Bush, and there are minor delays on the Elizabeth line between Paddington and Shenfield. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central and Metropolitan lines, and on the Northern, Highgate Station is closed because the fire alarms are going off. On the roads, one lane is closed on the North Circular Road westbound at Henley's Corner. A car's broken down. It's very busy on the approach, and there are delays for about half an hour on the A2 westbound between the Danston interchange and the Kidbrook interchange.
LBC.
As fuel prices continue to rise, running costs are getting harder to ignore. So MG is making the switch to electric simpler with a £1,500 MG EV car grant, 0% APR representative and zero deposit required across the MG EV range, excluding MG IM5 and MG IM6. A smart move, made simple. Book your test drive today at mg.co.uk. MG Motor UK are a credit broker, not a lender. PCP balloon payment required for ownership. Registered by June 30th. T's and C's at mg.co.uk.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot will have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching.
Get in tonight's draw. Euro Millions from the National Lottery.
It could be you.
Rules apply, 18 plus.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
When you're smiling,
missing teeth stop you smiling? At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Quickly take you through the front. It was front page news over the holiday weekend, of course, this idea of a potential reset, looking at the single market. I have to say, coming out of Brussels, the mood music is rather doubtful and all that. But we'll continue our conversation because, well, it leads us into actually taking stories from a couple of the front pages. Now, the Daily Mirror, I remind you, the Daily Mirror, very much a Labour-supporting newspaper. They've done research. I would imagine it didn't particularly please the editors when it came in. And they've done the personal approval ratings of the main party leaders. So Ed Davey and Zach Polansky are tied at -8. Nigel Farage, surprisingly, is only at -3. Kemi Badenoch is probably quite heartened by the fact she's only at -2. Keir Starmer, so just to remind you, -2 Badenoch, -3 Farage. -8, both Sir Ed Davey and Zach Polansky. Sir Keir Starmer, that would be -44. -44. He would appear to be a liability, and that is endorsed by the story on the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Toxic Starmer kept away from local elections campaigns. And the newspaper has done some analysis of the, we come into the last few days of the local election. And Nigel Farage has recorded 71 visits around the country. Kemi Badenoch comes in at 41 appearances. Sir Keir Starmer, I appreciate he's the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer in at just 11. Something we need to put to one of his senior colleagues when he joins us later in the show. A couple of the other front pages for you. It would appear that there could be now Met Police action to go after the suspect for the murder of Madeleine McCann. This is, of course, that German who's been named many times. I probably won't give you his name again, because if it does move to a trial, we wouldn't want to do anything to prejudice, but you know of whom I speak. The Sun has a very powerful picture of a boat loaded with goodness me. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 30... Do you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there were 60 migrants on this boat. All, it would appear to be, roughly men of the same age. Here they are. We're now at we're on the verge of 200,000 since the crisis began 8 years ago. It's worth reminding you, the then Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, back in 2018, cut short his holiday after 80 migrants arrived. That was just in 2018. Now we're at 200,000. A couple of other front pages for you. A big interview with, I've mentioned Kemi Badenoch, that's in the front page of the Daily Mail. All the all the political leaders trying to lay out the ground for the last few days of the election campaign, the local elections in England. Of course, they are national elections, we need to remind you, in Wales and in Scotland. And lastly, the Financial Times telling us Iran warns US not to enter Strait of Hormuz, and that's been covered on the LBC News Bulletin. That's also the front page of the LBC app. And if you go online, there's considerable coverage, again, with the Huff Post talking about the build-up to those local elections in England. A lot of England going to the polls. National elections, of course, for Scotland and in Wales. Sam, you're in Hatfield, and you will be the next caller on our conversation about this EU reset. But let's go. I've got a possibility, an opportunity to speak to a journalist now in Leipzig. This follows the horrific story yesterday. At least two people killed, many injured after a driver seemed to plough into a crowd in the centre of Leipzig in eastern Germany. James Jackson, journalist in Berlin, joins me now. What's the latest you've got on this, James? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So the latest that we've heard is that the driver of the car, which has killed two people and injured others, including some critically, has been identified as Jeffrey K. So he's a 33-year-old boxing trainer. He's a German-born, ethnic German, whatever you want to call it. And there has been some reports that he definitely just came out of a psychiatric clinic. And I've just seen that there have been some reports that there was some kind of fight or dispute that happened before he did this. So initially, many people were, of course, scared that this was some kind of terrorist incident, as we have seen a number of those in Germany in recent years, though not in about a year or so. And it looks more like a case of, dare I say it, toxic masculinity.
Do we have an idea? Do we have an idea, James, how many have been injured?
So two people have been critically injured, and actually the police said yesterday they weren't able to give a number at that time of how many have been injured. So I think we're looking at above 10 people, because this was a busy shopping day in Leipzig, just coming at the end of a bank holiday over here, and he drove straight into the crowd. So
we will have to see how that plays out with the police. James Jackson reporting from Berlin. Thank you, James. James rightly referencing last year, two people were killed in the western German city of Mannheim. A 40-year-old German man drove a car into a group of pedestrians only weeks after a similar attack by an Afghan asylum seeker on a trade union demonstration in Munich. That killed two, injuring more than 40, including many children. And if you go back to December 2024, not that long ago, several people were killed in a car ramming attack by a Saudi doctor on a Christmas market in the eastern German city of Magdeburg. That incident came months after a stabbing attack by a Syrian man at a festival in the western city of Solingen, if I'm saying that correctly. So the journalists are right to reference those. 7:25, let's come back to the UK, albeit for European matters, this idea of some kind of reset. Sam in Hatfield. Sam, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Neil. Nick.
That's all right, sir.
Sorry, Ian.
Nick. Right. I'll be Nick today. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, all sorry, right, Nick.
Sid. On we go.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right, Bill.
Well, what we were talking about, you
yes,
know, why we left the European Union in the first place, because of the net migration went up very badly.
Yes.
And
well, that's one of the reasons. Know, I mean, I think there were other reasons, but yes, certainly that was a predominant reason for a lot of people. You're right.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
That was the main reason. Now, so no, we left European Union back in 2020, and we have gone 6 years gone by now. So there are so many people want to come in.
Okay, I don't want to do the I don't want to be rude, sir, but we're not going to redo the Brexit debate. Other people will do that for you. Do we need that EU reset? Would that be a sellout by Sir Keir Starmer, or would it make sense?
No, we don't need it, actually.
Why not, sir? Why do you think not?
The free movement of right will bring another, you know, at least 6 million people coming into this country.
Well, how do you get to that?
One year.
No, it's taken. What do you mean, via boats or in total immigration?
No, we don't need the boats to come in.
I see.
Have the free movement of rights, people come to this country. They don't contribute a single penny to this country, and they can claim benefit.
But net migration is down, of course, if you allow for both the legal routes and the illegal routes. The actual number coming in is down year on year. So I don't know how you get to the figure you've just quoted, sir.
You know, this is my prediction. You know,
last
4 years, the people who came to different countries in the European Union, all these 27 countries, the people came from various of the countries and they gained their nationality. Say, for instance, Syrian came to, I'm not saying any country, and people who came to, you know, Germany, they've given asylum and they've given German passports and they are citizens of Germans now.
Yes.
They can come to this country tomorrow if we have the reset, the Brexit. And then they can come tomorrow and they can bring their spouse, their family, their children and their mother, father, all the dependents into this country under the EU law.
Right. Okay.
Right?
Yes.
And they can claim the benefit next day.
Okay.
Not like that.
All right. Okay, Sam, I will leave it there. I think that figure's a little toppy, as they say, a little high that you'll predict, but we will see. Sam, have yourself a good day. Thank you, Stuart in Edgware. Stuart, do we need a reset? If so, why?
Not really, no. He said quite plainly that we would never rejoin the EU and the customs union. Now, if it was growing at 4% a year or something, it might be worth thinking about. But they're not growing at all. The whole economies of the EU are collapsing. Let me give you an analogy. It's like being on the Titanic, getting off onto a lifeboat and getting back on the Titanic again. It's that ridiculous. Why will we get back on this failing, useless organisation?
Because of the... a lot of people would say because of the... and you're right to highlight the fact that, unfortunately, the GDP of all our European friends isn't going particularly well. But they might point to the success of countries such as Switzerland, who are sort of in the bits that they want and not in the bits they don't want. And actually, Switzerland is a pretty strong economy. They might point to that. Stuart.
Switzerland's a tiny little country with a fraction of that. We've got more people living in London than live in Switzerland.
Almost as many people living in London than the whole of Sweden, but I don't see what
exactly.
I don't see what that means. You still want the economy to be... it's still relevant to the people who live there, isn't it?
Well,
do you not think?
No, because if you look at the amount... if you say Poland, now Poland's doing very well.
I don't have figures for the Polish economy.
Their economy's actually doing very, very well. There's a good reason for that. they don't let lots of illegals in there, so they haven't got the billions that we're paying out over here.
Well, that's something we are going to be looking at later in the show, Stuart. Thank you. As I've told you already, one front page today saying we are on the cusp of 200,000 people arriving just on those small boats in 8 years. And it's worth reminding you that the then Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, cut a family holiday short to tackle the crisis when 80 people arrived on one day. And now it's 200,000. What about that one in, one out? 200,000. Can't wait to speak with the government minister later. Meanwhile, if we're talking about boats and ships, a cruise of death, this terrible situation as these folk have this awful disease, and it is at the moment, of course, it would seem they're stranded, one of whom is travel blogger Jake Rosmarin.
What's happening right now is very real for all of us here. We're not just a story. We're not just headlines. We're people.
Three dead of this supposed rat virus. 23 Brits on board. A full report coming up. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time. Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is bringing together leaders from across public life this morning as part of efforts to tackle anti-Semitism. Sir Keir Starmer will tell the summit in Downing Street that recent attacks on the Jewish community are now a crisis. Iran says clashes with the US Navy around the Strait of Hormuz show there's no military solution to the war. But Tehran has warned the US operation to try and reopen the waterway risks dragging America back into a quagmire. And efforts are continuing to try and get hundreds of people off a cruise ship, which is at the centre of the hantavirus outbreak. Officials in Cape Verde are refusing to let the ship dock, saying passengers can't leave to protect locals. LBC weather, a mix of sunshine and showers across the UK. Some wintry showers possible in northern Scotland later. Warm for most, though, a high of 18 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
So you get the ridiculous situation of 20-somethings wandering around central London calling on the Houthis to hit another cargo tanker in the Strait of Hormuz. And when you ask them, well, who are this group that you are telling supporting in their targeting of these ships that are making their way through the Strait of Hormuz, you've got no idea. No surprise leads to an atmosphere in which the people who are being hit by your words have to hide themselves away.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
Time to bring your out-of-date kitchen up to date. Wix has over 80 kitchen styles so you can find the perfect one. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
May we have your attention? Introducing the Volkswagen May event. Get an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative across the range, including the amazing Golf, Tiguan and all-electric ID3. Major. I said it was in May, right?
Yes.
Ends Monday the 18th of May. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer. You may just find the car you've been looking for.
Stop it.
Participating retailers. Excludes T-Roc ID bars and Golf GTI 50. ID3 from stock only. Indemnities may be required. Registered by 30th of August. Volkswagen Finance.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, back to your reactions. Is possible reset? And of course, there's 200,000 arrivals on the small boats. That's a story coming up. Now, one front page I left out was the City AM. Christian May is its editor-in-chief. The headline is Game On. Game On for what? Christian, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, bit of a David and Goliath battle on the cards in corporate world, certainly in corporate America. The American video game bricks and mortar retailer GameStop, which was actually itself at the heart of a bit of a craze during the pandemic. They were being squeezed on their share price and hedge funds were circling them, making big bets that they were going to go under. And an awful lot, I mean thousands and thousands of individual people ploughed money into the stock, sent it spiralling and squeezed their hedge funds themselves. It was a bit of a cult moment in financial circles, certainly during the pandemic, actually inspired a film. Anyway, they are, alongside eBay, definitely David in this battle. But what are they after? Well, they're after eBay. They have launched an audacious $55 billion takeover bid for eBay. Now, how are they going to do this? Well, they said they've got their financing in place, and they said that there'll be some immediate benefits and cost savings, and that they want to help eBay finally take on Amazon. Well, it is just worth noting that before trading started yesterday in the US, eBay had a value of $46 billion, I think. GameStop itself was worth a little under $12 billion. So, as I say, it is a rather audacious bid. But they said, look, if the board of eBay don't engage with us on this offer, about which we are deadly serious, we'll take our proposition straight to your shareholders. So that's going to be quite a fun one to watch play out.
Where do you see it going next, lastly, on that one, Christian?
Well, we have to wait and see what the formal response from eBay is. I think at this stage they've simply said they're aware of it, they've acknowledged it. It would be a question now as to whether the board of eBay say this actually does make sense and we should explore it, or whether they say forget about it, we're not interested, in which case, as I say, it becomes a hostile bid where GameStop take their message straight to shareholders and try and win them around that way.
Let's go to the hospitality sector, specifically the pub sector. What's making headlines there?
Well, in the Telegraph, I think an enterprising journalist who perhaps went out for a treat in London over the weekend was so stunned by the prices of the pints of beer that he was ordering, he's written an entire story about it. cost of a pint of beer has hit £10, they say, in London for the first time. Now, it should be noted that they're talking about some very, very swanky places, the kind of places you and I meet up to this section of the show, Nick.
Yes.
Talking about the Chesterfield Hotel, talking about posh roof gardens in Mayfair, where bottles, little bottles of beer are being brought to your table for about 11 quid, and pints of Heineken for £11, Stanley's rooftop bar in Mayfair. Well, you know, I suppose if that's where you want to go, that's where you want to go. But it's definitely part of a trend that beer prices are going up. And one of the consequences of that, of course, new figures from the Beer and Pub Association showed 161 pubs shut their doors in the first 3 months of this year. Trade body says that's around 2,500 jobs lost. And Emma McClarkin, the chief executive of that group, says the scale of these closures is avoidable because pubs are doing a good trade. It's just that their profits cannot keep up with the costs that are being imposed upon them.
Figures in the pub trade, figures for our airports as well, the best performers and the worst performers. Where do they stack up in the league table, Christian?
Yes, the league table of the longest average delay at British airports has been published today using data from the Civil Aviation Authority. It comes ahead of a summer which I suspect will add to these figures. There will be some rejigging and some jiggery-pokery of flight schedules without a doubt as the aviation fuel crunch starts to hit, and I think it will. Another note out today from Goldman Sachs saying the UK is uniquely exposed to any shortages of aviation fuel. Anyway, that's down the line. What we know today is that Manchester Airport tops the table with an average delay of 20 minutes. Right down the bottom is Liverpool John Lennon, only 9 minutes as an average delay. All of these airports have been asked to explain themselves, and they've all said, look, the two biggest factors that lead to delays are people in France going on strike in the air traffic control sector and bad weather, neither of which we can do anything about.
Thanks for that, Christian. I will talk with you about the same time tomorrow. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM. Kevin, you'll be the next caller on this supposed reset, but let's pick up on another story, one you've heard already on the LBC News Bulletin, about 23 Britons who are trapped on board the cruise ship hit by a suspected hantavirus outbreak. 6 cases of the rat-borne virus that, by the way, was responsible for the death of Gene Hackman's wife, Betsy Arakawa, in 2025. Do you recall that? Have been reported on the boat, the Hondius, if I'm saying that correctly. One of them has now confirmed 2 Brits are among the sick, including a crew member. 3 people have died. The total number, as I said, I've told you, of Britons is 23. But let's get the health aspect on this. Devi Sridhar is Professor and Chair in Global Public Health at the University of Edinburgh and joins me now. Professor, thank you very much for your time. OK, what can you tell us about hantavirus and why is it rodent-borne? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, so hantavirus is a disease that we've known about for a while. It's largely found in low-income countries or in China, and it's usually in rural areas, people who are exposed to rodents and their droppings, which is the main transmission mechanism. So it's really unusual to see this on a cruise ship, but also spreading, you know, as in a cluster, as we're seeing of more and more cases each day. Potentially, they're not suspected, but they're becoming confirmed.
What are the symptoms? How is it to be treated?
Well, the symptoms are, at the start, very similar to like a flu, you know, a fever, you don't feel well. A few days later, breathlessness, a cough. And then where it really gets you, at least the strain that's from South America, is a pneumonia in the lungs. So quite a lot of fluid in the lungs, has a high mortality rate of about 40%. But that's because we don't have an approved treatment for it or a vaccine. So what medical professionals are doing is providing supportive care, basically trying to help the body get build an immune response to be able to fight it off. You know, through giving fluids, through, you know, making sure that, you know, other broad general antivirals are given, but there's nothing targeted or specific for this disease right now.
Professor, is it like other conditions that the younger and the less vulnerable you are, and the younger and fitter you are, the better the chances are that you'll come through?
Well, that's generally the case with diseases as a whole, right? That the more fit you are, the more you're able to fight them off. I think this is a different situation, though, because right now they're working to sequence the exact strain. But for something like this, if you're in close proximity, you have a higher viral load potentially, depending on how these individuals have become infected, you could still get very, very sick even if you're young. So I think right now they're trying to figure out the sequencing, what strain it is, how do these individuals get infected? Was it off the ship and they got back on the cruise ship? Because the incubation period is quite long. Is it spreading on the ship? And actually, what do you do with the people on it? Because there are a lot of people who are on the ship who aren't being let off, yet might be feeling like they might be exposed or they might be vulnerable or need care.
And how is it spread?
It's usually spread, and I'm just saying the majority of cases, through rodents, droppings, or in very close proximity. So think rats, mice, you're in close proximity to their feces, and then you breathe it in, and then actually
you get quite sick. But on board the ship, unless there's rats, I mean, if someone's coughing without covering their mouth, or with a mouth, are you going to catch it in that way?
Well, so this is what they're waiting on the sequencing for. So the majority of cases, it is not spread human to human. It is spread from an animal to a human. But there is a strain called the Andy strain where we have seen human-to-human transmission before in small numbers, like a few dozen. But it does have the potential, if it's that strain, to spread human-to-human. But it's unlikely that it's that strain. So I think right now we're just waiting to hear what exactly is the strain. Is it the Andy strain? Is it another one? And that'll help understand, actually, what do you do with the individuals and passengers on board?
Well, that was my final question. It's obviously not desirable for the passengers. It's horrific for them. But is that actually the safest place for this vessel to be? Do you have a view on that?
Well, I guess the challenge is, imagine that you take everybody off, they're from around the world, they go back to their home country, and then you discover that actually it has the potential to spread human to human. We all know how that could look. So I think right now they're saying we're keeping everybody on board till we have more information on how we can manage this, till we know the exact strain. They're offering medical support to those who are becoming unwell, but you can imagine if you're on the ship, you do feel imprisoned and thinking, I just want to get off.
Professor, thank you so much for your time. Debbie Sridhar is Professor and Chair in Global Public Health at the University of Edinburgh, giving everything. I don't know about you, I'd not even heard of Hunter virus until I recall the death now of Gene Hackman, but it's not up there with, say, the other terrible diseases that often visit some parts of the world. So, as I say, 23 Brits are on the board. Three people have died, none of them believed to be British, but people have Brits. Two Brits are among those who have caught it. We'll come back to our conversation about the reset in a moment. Kevin, you'll be the next call. Let me just put some of the social media into the conversation. Tony says the EU faces worse tariffs than the UK. Yoni says, our leaders are meant to act in our best interests. Closer relationships with the EU are in our best interests. This seems to be a decent attempt at that without breaking his manifesto promise. Well, he is actually, Yoni. It would be breaking the promise. Another Tony points out that Starmer, Macron and Merz are universally despised by their own populations. All three are hated at home. And Robin Chertsey, the European Economic Community was good for Britain, but it went wrong when John Major signed the Maastricht Treaty, giving away sovereignty without a referendum, allowing Brussels to set 70% of our laws and legislation. A £1 billion cost to the EU would be good value if we could go back into the EEC arrangement, which allows the government we vote for to set our laws and legislation. Yeah, let's stay with the reset rather than doing the Brexit debate, which I think has been done and is done still regularly by some. Kevin's in Oxford. Kevin, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yes, morning, Nick. We said no. We don't need to. We don't need to be slinging, you know, £1 billion a year at that bureaucratic nonsense. You know, that old malarkey again, Nick. Here we go. They start sending loads of money to Europe.
Right,
Nick. I'm over in Europe all the time. I was in Germany recently, speaking to local Germans. The country's broke. It's mirrored, Nick, like this country.
Right.
The same thing. The housing, the immigration, the hospitals, the education. It's exactly the
what
same.
What do they put that down to?
They put it down, Nick, so they can't sustain the immigration because it's costing too much money. It's taken over the housing, etc. They haven't got the housing and the infrastructure. Switzerland, don't compare it, Nick. They're not spending 20 million a day on hotels and utensils, you know.
No,
so you can't, you know. So unfortunately, Nick, and I'm not against, you know, I'm not some kind of guy that's saying you can't have people come into a country for safety, but we cannot sustain it, and nor can Europe, Nick. And every France, Italy, Germany, I've been to them all, Nick. They're all saying the same thing. It's mirrored. You might as well be speaking to Alfie Bloggs down at Peckham Market.
Kevin, lastly, when you're in Germany and you're speaking with German business colleagues or whatever, does it all track back to Angela Merkel? Where did it all begin?
It does. It is the mass immigration show open the doors, yeah. And they just can't sustain it. I mean, it's mirrored, Nick. It's all over Europe. We've got this idea that Europe's doing so well. We're not doing too bad, you know. I'm not saying we're great, you know, but it's mirrored, Nick.
All right. Kevin, safe travels. As and when you go through Europe, thank you for your input on that. We'll take more calls on that then later in the show.
A woman's told LBC a man who'd been harassing her was given a key to her hotel room. I'm LBC's Emma Call with the exclusive.
That's in the next hour. 7:45, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's bringing together leaders from across public life for a Downing Street summit as part of efforts to tackle anti-Semitism. Iran says clashes with the US Navy around the Strait of Hormuz show there's no military solution to the war. And efforts are continuing to try and get hundreds of people off a cruise ship, which is at the centre of a hantavirus outbreak. LBC weather, a mix of sunshine and showers for the UK, some wintry downpours possible for northern Scotland. Warm for most, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. These big problems on the trains do continue. Gatwick Express services are running between the airport and Brighton, and Thameslink and Southern services are suspended between Haywards Heath and Three Bridges. It's because of an ongoing investigation. But Gatwick Express services are severely disrupted to and from London as well. Southern services are running as well between Watford Junction and Shepherd's Bush, and there are minor delays on the Elizabeth line between Paddington and Shenfield. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central and Metropolitan lines. On the roads, very busy on the M25 clockwise to junction 11 at Chertsey. It's because a car's broken down on the exit slip road. One lane's closed on the North Circular Road westbound at Henley's Corner. A car's broken down and it's busy on the approach.
This is LBC.
Is your cat drinking enough? Discover Purina One Hydrolife and help support their daily hydration with a taste they'll enjoy. Purina One Hydrolife. Make it easy.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Wrong tool for the job? Don't make that mistake with your van. Get up to 30% off selected new Toyota vans with a warranty up to 10 years or 100,000 miles with every qualifying routine service. Visit your nearest Toyota centre or visit toyota.co.uk/vansavings for more details. Savings on selected vans ordered by the 30th of June 2026. UK residents. See toyota.co.uk for full details. T's and C's apply.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different. Should be fun.
Or wobbly. Or wet.
The wet suit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George, is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home. That was such a laugh.
I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Saga Travel Insurance covers most pre-existing medical conditions and has been named a Which Best Buy. Smart choice. And right now, you can get 20% off travel insurance until the 11th of June. Search Saga Travel Insurance for a quote today. New policies only subject to medical screening. Standard and Plus are Which Best Buys May 2025. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49. Back to our conversation about that reset in a moment. But as you've already heard on the LBC News bulletins, the Prime Minister holding a summit later today. He'll ask leaders from business, civil society, health, culture, higher education and policing how they can move towards, his words, quotes, at pace to try and tackle the issue of anti-Semitism. Perhaps some details on that. Certainly details on some expenditure in that area now from Housing, Communities and Local Government Secretary Steve Reid, who joins me now. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. What is it that you and your colleagues are announcing today? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. It's good to be back on your show, as always. Well, the Prime Minister, as you say, is hosting a summit at No. 10 Downing Street straight after this show, more or less, to look at what more we can do across society to tackle anti-Semitism. The government playing its part, of course. So we're announcing £1 million additional funding through our Common Ground programme. That is money that will go into charities and community organisations in Jewish communities so that they can do more to keep their communities safe. But we're also bringing together leaders from the world of business, the arts, education, and other faiths and religions, because this cannot be something government alone deals with. We've seen an increase, an upsurge in anti-Semitic attacks and hatred against the Jewish community. We need everybody in the society to call it out for what it is, racism, so that we can stop it.
OK. Specifically, what might that money be spent on as part of the Common Ground programme, Secretary of State?
Well, that will be for the communities themselves to decide. I think the reason we're giving it to charities is for them to decide what it's best used on. Like, some of it will be on additional security measures. If you're, you know, hosting events to bring people together, you want to make sure that those are going to be safe. But there may be other projects and programs bringing together leaders from different faiths in the community. For instance, since that appalling October the 7th attack on Israel, there has been a breakdown in relations in some communities between Jewish community leaders and Muslim community leaders. We need to bring people back together. All of us have a shared interest in calling out racism. We need to create the circumstances and the context where those dialogues reopen.
Is it now, in hindsight, perhaps a mistake to have allowed 2.5 years of what some people describe as hate marches? Not to say that everyone taking part in that march was hatred, of course they weren't, but there were expressions and language used that clearly is inflammatory. We were too tolerant over those, weren't we, Secretary of State?
Well, the police themselves have said that policing should have been tougher on those marches. I couldn't agree more. I've got Jewish friends, as well as speaking to leaders in the Jewish community, who are afraid to go into central London when those marches are going on, because... What, you know, it's entirely legitimate to have a debate about the actions of a foreign state. It is not legitimate and it is not acceptable to use those marches to target the British Jewish community. They are not part of Israel, whatever people may think about Israel's behaviour. It is nothing to do with the British Jewish community, and yet they have been targeted by anti-Semites who are using age-old tropes and images that we've seen before in history, leading to the darkest moments in our history. They're resurfacing in this society and we cannot tolerate it.
All right, well, that's laying out the Labour position. So what action will be taken against the Labour West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner, Kevin Foster, who's been campaigning with a would-be Birmingham City Councillor whose husband has Facebook accounts talking about Israel being a terrorist nation and also some vile comments about Jews that I'll choose not to repeat? What happens now to Kevin Foster, the Commissioner?
Well, I must say, I don't know. That's the first time I've heard about that, Nick. I think
it's the front page of the Daily Express. It's not that difficult to see. I'll hold it up for you.
Yeah, but I got up at 5 and I've not had a chance to read it yet. I'm afraid to say.
5:15, but anyway, here we go. So this is a Labour Police and Crime Commissioner who's been campaigning with someone. Let me just tell you a little bit more. This has been campaigning. The husband is Kayan Kamal. Facebook account. I'll read this one out. This is a quote attributed to Hitler. "I would have killed all the Jews of the world, but I kept some to show why I killed them. The commissioner has put his campaigning with that man's wife. Well, what's going to happen to him?
Well, it's quite right the police should be looking into that. But is it right to blame an individual for what their family members do?
How comfortable are you with him as the Labour Commissioner, West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner, this man?
Well, are you saying it was him that said those things?
No. Right. He is out campaigning with a would-be councillor whose husband has said that.
Well, a would-be councillor whose husband said that. Again, yes. I think it's a bit unfair to blame somebody for what their husband or wife or family member said or did.
Would you not check the Facebook?
I think it's awful. I think that individual, the police should look as to whether they've committed a hate crime and whether there's an arrest. You know, in my constituency, as you said earlier, Streatham and Croydon, two Green Party candidates have been arrested for stirring up racial hatred. Not their family members, but them directly. And yet the Greens have put out a leaflet this weekend saying it's a cynical misrepresentation to tell the public that this is what's going on. Now, we need parties to stop putting up candidates who are anti-Semitic and call out those who are. In this case, you're telling me it's the husband of a candidate.
Yes.
I'm not sure you can blame an individual for what somebody in their family does, but we should certainly be looking at that individual, and the police will have an interest in it. And if they've done something wrong, you know, that language from what you just read to me is disgusting and obscene, but we see it far too often in our society right now, Nick, and we need to call it out and stop it.
Can we go to other matters? As a senior representative of the government on the round, what exactly is Sir Keir Starmer's position as regards a possible reset with the European Union?
Well, I know from my former job when I was Environment Secretary, British food exports to the EU collapsed by over a fifth after we left the European Union because of the poor deal that the Conservative government at the time signed. Now, we want to reset that relationship so we can take down those trade barriers, because doing that puts more money in the pockets of British workers, in this case farmers, and helps grow our economy and helps grow jobs. That's what we should be focusing on. How do we get a better relationship with the European Union on trade, but given what we see happening in the Middle East and in Ukraine, also on security? So it's quite right to look at how we can strengthen that.
Would that be then rejoining a single market?
No, that's been ruled out. We had a referendum, that issue is settled, but even outside being in the single market, there's much more we can do to lower the trade barriers that have been put up that have led to our country becoming poorer than we needed to have been.
If we look at local elections just a few days away, you won't have seen the newspapers, but the Daily Mirror, very much a Labour-supporting newspaper, has done a survey as to the personal approval ratings of the leaders. Sir Ed Davey and Zach Polanski are both -8. Nigel Farage is -3. Kemi Badenoch is -2. Sir Keir Starmer is -44. Why is your leader so universally unpopular?
Well, I'm afraid every Prime Minister that we've had in recent years has been unpopular because people are angry about the state of the economy and angry about the state of our public services. The thing to do to fix that is not to do what the Tories did and doom scroll through leader after leader so that you never focus on the actual problem. It's for all of us to focus on tackling the cost of living and improving our public services. Now, we're seeing NHS waiting lists fall. Pensioners have just had a £500 increase in their pensions. Families have just seen £100 off their energy bills despite everything going on in the Middle East. So this government is making a difference, but it's not enough. It's a start, but we need to stay focused, and we need to not get involved in the psychodramas that meant that the Conservative government failed absolutely to tackle all of the problems that matter to the British public.
Do you recognise the dialogue that Sir Keir is seen as toxic now and has been kept away from the local election campaigns trail?
Well, he's not being kept away. He's been in Scotland, he's been in Wales, he's been all over England. I mean, just this last few days, he's been in Armenia, of course.
Let me give you the figures. During the local elections, national in Scotland and in Wales, as you rightly referenced, thank you, Secretary of State, Nigel Farage has had 71 visits, Kemi Badenoch 41 appearances, the Prime Minister 11.
Well, the Prime Minister's got a country to run and a government to lead. You know, he had to go to Armenia as part of the European summit that happened there over the weekend, which none of the other party leaders have to do. But
no.
You'll see him out again this week. I'm going to see him at 9 o'clock with a whole group of leaders from right across society and
the
Jewish community.
Yes, that's not him on the election trail, though, is it? I mean, do you recognise these reports that there's a plot now, that he's been kept away from the local elections because he's toxic and he's playing a limited role, and there's even a suggestion now that there could be the sort of deal that was done between Blair and Brown, plans to demand he sets a date for his resignation? Do you recognise that, Secretary of State?
No, it's because he's the Prime Minister, he's got a big job to do leading
the country. So there isn't this group of disgruntled backbenchers who are demanding a date for his resignation?
Do you know what, Nick? I speak to my fellow MPs all the time on WhatsApp, on phone calls. What the vast majority of us want to happen is for this psychodrama that we keep reading about in the press to come to an end. We want to get on and focus on the cost of living crisis and improving our public services and doing what the British publisher...
But why is he so unpopular, then? If you've increased money to pensions, I don't understand. Why does it follow he's so desperately unpopular?
Well, we've got a five-year term. It takes time to make the change that people want to see, and it takes time to communicate that change. We need to keep going. We need to, you know, people, pensioners, I was knocking on the door of a pensioner a couple of weekends ago who didn't know that this month their pension had gone up £500. I think we do need to get better at telling people what this government's done, but what we don't want to do is copy the Tories and throw out leader after leader after leader until, in the end, we don't tackle anything the British public.
We've got a minute or so together. I'm sort of giving you a glossary of the front pages. Another one you won't have seen is the front page of The Sun. We're on the cusp now of 200,000 people arriving via small boats. Only 7,612 got deported. This is under both administrations, by the way. This didn't start under Labour. But how's your one-in, one-out deal going now?
Well, we're still engaging with the French to look at what more we can do to stop crossings. I think 40,000 crossings have been prevented.
Yeah, but you don't know they don't come and have another go. If you come all the way from Syria and you get turned around, you're not just going to say, well, I'll go back to Damascus. Oh, you're going to have another go the next week, obviously.
No, the key is to make sure, you know, we've removed 60,000 people now who had no right to be here. We're closing 40 of the Conservative asylum hotels that they opened when they were in power. So if people are coming across illegally and they're thinking there's a very good chance they're going to get sent back again, they're much less likely to come here. So that's the approach we're taking. And you can see it in the number of removals. You can see it in the number of Tory asylum hotels that are being closed down. We're going in the right direction, but absolutely, Nick, it's not enough yet, but we'll keep pushing.
And again, do you not think this leads to the unpopularity of the party and the leader?
Well, it does, but, you know, Parliament's re-elected for 5 years. The British public will judge this government at the end of that term, not after a year and a half.
Lastly, you may be aware, and this is very much on your brief, there's been another report of people what's called gaming the system, i.e. moving onto effectively farmland or other land over a bank holiday weekend, putting down tarmac and moving in a so-called illegal traveller site. This was done in the Sevenoaks area, you may recall, over the Easter weekend. Sevenoaks Council saying, telling locals it will take 12 months to evict people from this illegal camp. Why?
Well, I don't know the details of that. I mean, I've seen it in my own constituency, and those people that come into green spaces, parks, whatever, are normally evicted within a few days. I don't know why in that particular one they're taking 12 months. Sounds to me like they could go much faster than it. I'm happy to have a look at it after the show, but...
But we have another one which we're going to report on this time. This is one in Essex. It does seem they wait for these bank holiday weekends and then they move in, don't they?
Well, I mean, it happens throughout the year, to be honest, in different places, but you need the police to move in very, very quickly and remove them so it doesn't become
an
option.
Have they got the necessary powers, though, Secretary of State, to move these people on?
Well, what I know is when it happened in my constituency in a park, they were gone within days. So the powers must exist or the police couldn't have done it. So I don't know why they're going slow in this case.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. You must now, of course, attend that summit, as you say, where the Prime Minister is gathering together all sorts of civil leaders, health leaders, religious leaders as well, to try and tackle the scourge of anti-Semitism. Thanks for your input on that. Steve Reid, 2 minutes after 8, news headlines on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister is bringing together leaders from policing, business and education in Downing Street in an effort to counter anti-Semitism. Sir Keir Starmer will tell them that the recent attacks are now a crisis. Last week, two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green in North London. The Community Secretary, Steve Reid, has just told Nick that the whole of society has to stand with Jewish communities.
We're announcing £1 million additional funding through our Common Ground programme. That is money that will go into charities and community organisations in Jewish communities so that they can do more to keep their communities safe. This cannot be something government alone deals with. We've seen an increase, an upsurge in anti-Semitic attacks and hatred against the Jewish community. We need everybody in the society to call it out for what it is.
Iran says clashes with the US Navy around the Strait of Hormuz show that there's no military solution to the war. Tehran has warned, though, that the US operation to try and reopen the waterway risks dragging America back into a quagmire. Travelodge has apologised after a woman claimed that a man who'd been harassing her was given a key to her room in York last year. It's the latest in a series of reported security lapses involving the chain. Speaking exclusively to LBC, Lucy, which isn't her real name, says no checks were carried out by staff.
I obviously felt like I could have been sexually assaulted because there was a man telling me he was sexually attracted to me. He went with intention, got a room key and entered my room.
Travelodge has apologised and says it's made changes to its checking procedures. Efforts are continuing to try and get hundreds of people off a cruise ship, which is at the centre of a hantavirus outbreak. Officials in Cape Verde are refusing to let the ship dock, saying that passengers can't leave to protect locals. Three people have died following the outbreak. A report's found higher living costs, debt and insecure work are leading to more exploitation of British people. The Anti-Slavery Commissioner has warned that advances in technology is making it easier for criminals to recruit and control victims. The government says it is working with survivors to inform new policy. And China's Wu Yizhe is snooker's new world champion. He beat Sean Murphy 18-17 in the first final frame decider in almost a quarter of a century. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,363. It closed down 14 on Friday. The pound buys $1.36 and a euro 16. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK. Some wintry downpours possible on higher ground in northern Scotland. A warm day for most, though. A high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Diary, what time's my Specsavers eye test?
Hi, Miriam. It's in 15 minutes. Would you like directions?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Exit the bedroom, pass the dog's basket, sit at the kitchen table. You have arrived.
Mm.
Enough time to move pickles. Visitors do make him frisky.
Some people can't get to Specsavers unaccompanied. That's why we offer home visits. Home visits from
Miriam's Journey.
Savers.
Down pickles.
Geographical restrictions apply. Find out if you're eligible online.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Watch it 5 minutes after eight on Tuesday, May the 5th. It's being called a milestone, the Channel Crossing Crisis. We're on the cusp of 200,000 arrivals since 2018. I stress since 2018, so both administrations are vulnerable here, or reliable, I should say. We'll look at that, and are there any solutions? In other news, as I've just been exploring, one of his senior colleagues, Keir Starmer's popularity has plummeted since this day.
I will lead this great party into a new era with confidence and with hope, so that when the time comes, we can serve our country again in government.
Now that says Labour leader, I stress not as PM, as Labour leader, around 6 years ago. My goodness, how the numbers are against him. We'll try and work out why. And ask you, if you are a Labour supporter, let's say Keir goes, as this supposedly, although completely shot down by that cabinet minister there, as this plot is supposedly leading towards, would that restore your faith? In other news,
a woman's told LBC a man who'd been harassing her was given a key to her hotel room. I'm LBC's Emma Corr with the exclusive.
And also on the hugely important matter of online safety for our children, our younger ones.
I've joined the Raise the Age campaign alongside dozens of bereaved families calling for a social media ban for under 16s. I'm online safety campaigner Lauren Cowell, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
And joining Lauren will be fellow online safety campaigner Ellen Room, with whom we've spoken on a number of occasions about this.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
If you were listening when we did the first hour of the show, I referenced the front page of one newspaper, The Sun, and there is one of those dinghies. And I have actually spent the time counting, and I make it 60 people on board one rubber dinghy. 60 people, all it would appear men of roughly the same age. Now, it's worth telling you, as we're now talking about a so-called milestone of 200,000 arrivals since 2018. In 2018, more than 80 migrants arrived on one day at Dover, so Sajid Javid cut short a family holiday to return home. That's not that long ago that 80 meant the Home Secretary decided he had to leave his family on holiday and come home to the United Kingdom. There are 60, probably more, because I can't see the other side of the boat. but at least 60 on one dinghy now. How have we got to this extraordinary position? Now, I say again, both parties, of course, are here, but this idea of one in, one out is sheer nonsense. 200,000 virtually in, 7,612 deported, something I put to Housing and Community Secretary Steve Reid within the last 10, 15 minutes.
Well, we're still engaging with the French to look at what more we can do to stop crossings. I think 40,000 crossings have been prevented.
Yeah, but you don't know they don't come and have another go. If you come all the way from Syria and you get turned around, you're not just going to say, well, I'll go back to Damascus. Oh, you're going to have another go the next week, obviously.
No, the key is to make sure, you know, we've removed 60,000 people now who had no right to be here. We're closing 40 of the Conservative asylum hotels that they opened when they were in power. So if people are coming across illegally and they're thinking there's a very good chance they're going to get sent back again, they're much less likely to come here. So that's the approach we're taking. And you can see it in the number of removals. You can see it in the number of Tory asylum hotels that are being closed down. We're going in the right direction, but absolutely, Nick, it's not enough yet, but we'll keep pushing.
And again, do you not think this leads to the unpopularity of the party and the leader?
Well, it does, but, you know, Parliament's elected for 5 years. The British public will judge this government at the end of that term, not after a year and a half.
Let's bring the conversation former Conservative MP, who served as Home Secretary and indeed Defence Secretary, Sir Grant Shapp, who joins me now. Good to speak with you again, Sir Grant. It's been a long while. So it looks like 200,000. It did sort of start on your watch. I've referenced your former senior colleague Sajid Javid coming home when 80 arrived. How is this to be tackled? Would Rwanda have worked, Sir Grant? Good morning.
Yeah, morning. Well, first of all, that in that last year, the numbers were coming down, I think, by about a quarter. And the Rwanda scheme had been voted through Parliament. It had taken a heck of a lot of energy to get it through against all the opposition. But it was, I think, even then starting to provide a kind of indication that people wouldn't be able to stay here, even though the scheme hadn't got going at the time. But if you scrap Rwanda, or rather, if you put Rwanda or a similar scheme in place, if you left the ECHR so that the law could be properly applied, if you said that people who come here illegally can never stay in the country. After all, they're coming from a safe country, in France in any case. And if you stop doing things like increasing the pull, by which I mean, you know, we've just seen the government increase welfare, removing the two-child cap, etc. So you stop sending out the message that essentially Britain's a soft touch. If you did those things, then you'd start to prevent there from being such a great pull. And I've heard you say actually three times, it's happened under both governments. Absolutely true. But here is the most important thing to understand. It has doubled on average per month under this government. Why? Because the first thing they did was scrap the Rwanda scheme and started to remove the things that we put in place that were starting to slow the flow.
But Sir Grant, as you rightly reference, Sir Grant, with the ECHR, would the lawyers have actually allowed these planes to have taken off to Rwanda?
Well, this was the problem, and I can reveal to you that when I cross-questioned Rishi Sunak, the previous Prime Minister, on why on earth he'd gone ahead and called an election 7 months early. He said, one of the things I'm really worried about, and I've not mentioned this to anyone before, Nick, but I was just saying okay. To you. He said, one of the things I'm really worried about is the lawyers are going to carry on, and even though we've legislated for the Rwanda scheme, we're going to struggle to get the planes off. And I think we just need to therefore go to the country. I'm sure that's a very bad idea, and indeed it was. But nonetheless, to your point, yes, the lawyers would have blocked it. The ECHR and other human rights lawyer, of the sort of Starmer ilk, would have been blocking this all the way. And this is part of the problem, a big part of the problem. We're just seen as a soft touch.
So, Sir Grant, did you ever try and lobby the former Prime Minister, Mr. Sunak, to leave the ECHR?
I should just say that I was Home Secretary for 6 days, so my period of
but you sat at the top table as Defence Secretary, as Business Secretary, yeah. So you would have had a voice. You could have said, possibly even to another previous Conservative Prime Minister, hey, come on, Boris, come on, Mrs. May, come on, Rishi, you know what's got to be done here. Did you ever attempt that, Sir Grant?
Yeah, I was coming to the view that actually, if nothing else is going to work, we were going to need to do that. It's not just about the ECHR. It is about the way that other elements of our human rights legislation and indeed our legal system operate to frustrate Parliament, even when Parliament's decided to do these things. But I was coming to that conclusion, and internally I was starting to say, I don't think we'll be able to solve this without it. I'm pleased that our policy is to do exactly that. Things evolve, and I'm pleased it is.
Always grateful for your time. Thanks very much, Sir Grant Shapps, former Home Secretary, indeed, as Defence and Transport Secretary as well, sharing an insight into the timing, I think we can say calamitous timing, of the last general election. Calamitous for the Conservatives, that is. Christopher House now, former advisor to Dame Priti Patel when she was Home Secretary, also former Conservative election candidate, and has written the thriller The Durian Pact, When Two Worlds Go to War. My God, that sounds almost prophetic, and joins me now. How frustrated did you, Dame Priti, and the rest of her office get with this particular issue when you were in power? Good morning. When she was in power. Good morning.
Well, very frustrated. I mean, the more the numbers went up, we knew this was both a political failure and a failure for the country. I mean, 200,000 people who should never have come here, they're going to be a cost to the taxpayer. The asylum hotel's running at £4 million a day with no sort of end in sight. And if they close an asylum hotel, they just go into taxpayer-funded houses of multiple occupation or spread around the country. So it was a huge failure, which was why, as Scrunch was saying, we tried to do the Rwanda scheme through Parliament, but it led to lots of opposition in Parliament and in the law courts, and eventually ran out of time because Rishi Sunak called the general election earlier. So in an ideal world, Rwanda would have been started years earlier and would have had a parliament, including Conservative MPs, who fully backed it. But that sadly wasn't the case.
Mr. House, do you see that as the solution then? I mean, it's fairly radical that the Conservatives believe out of ECHR, bring back a Rwanda-style scheme, wherever it might be, and that is the way. And also look at the so-called pull factor. Are those the three levers, really, to address?
Yes, I mean, the reason people get on boats to come across the channel is because they believe, and rightly, if they get here, they'll be able to stay because of our legal system. And once you're here, you can get a job, you can bring your relatives. So it makes sense for people to get on the boat. So to reverse that, you need to send a big signal that if you get on a boat to come to Britain, you won't be able to stay and you will be deported to a safe country, which was going to be Rwanda. Unfortunately, the Rwanda scheme was cancelled on the first day of the Labour government in office, but it already suffered a lot of problems because a lot of Conservative MPs themselves hadn't fully backed it. And yes, leaving the ECHR would help, but it would have been possible while remaining in the ECHR if the MPs had backed it fully.
Grateful for your time, Christopher Howe. Thank you. You served as an advisor to Dame Priti Patel when she was Home Secretary. You were a Conservative election candidate. Check out the book, The Durian Pact, When Two Worlds Go to War. Calls coming in already. Dennis, you'll be the first call on that. Also later in this hour,
another so-called bank holiday land grab, this time causing fury amongst locals in Essex. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma in Willows Green with the story.
Yeah, Shivani's report is later in this hour. It's 8:16, LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is bringing together leaders from policing, business and education in Downing Street this morning as part of efforts to try and tackle anti-Semitism. Iran says clashes with the US Navy around the Strait of Hormuz show there's no military solution to the conflict. And a cabinet minister has told Nick that he doesn't recognise reports that some Labour backbenchers are planning an open letter demanding a date for Sir Keir Starmer's resignation. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK, some wintry showers on higher ground in northern Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, Gatwick Express services are severely disrupted because of this ongoing investigation, including no trains between the airport and Brighton. And Thames Link and Southern services are suspended between Haywards Heath and Three Bridges. Southern aren't running as well between Watford Junction and Shepherd's Bush. On the trains as well, there are minor delays on the Elizabeth line between Paddington and Shenfield. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Central and Metropolitan lines. And on the roads, there are queues on the M1 southbound to Junction 1 at Staples Corner, and that's where a car has broken down. In Tottenham, Seven Sisters Road is partially blocked southbound at St Anne's Road because a mobile crane broke down and there are lengthy queues on the approach.
This is LBC.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure. I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. I probably will need some 2x4s. I want to go take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
You've packed enough suitcases to know quality when you see it. Well, Saga Travel Insurance has been named a Which Best Buy. And now get 20% off when you buy before the 11th of June. Search Saga Travel Insurance for a quote today. New policies only, standard and plus are Which Best Buys May 2025. Terms and conditions apply, over 50s only.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
May we have your attention? Introducing the Volkswagen May event. Get an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative across the range, including the amazing Golf, Tiguan and all-electric ID3. Major. I said it was in May, right?
Yes.
Ends Monday, the 18th of May. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer. You may just find the car you've been looking for.
Stop it.
Participating retailers. Excludes T-Roc ID bars and Golf GTI 50. ID3 from stock only. Indemnities may be required. Registered by 30th of August. Volkswagen Finance.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
That figure hanging in the air, 200,000, will certainly be there by the time of the weekend, if not during the weekdays through this week. Dennis is in Hemel Hempstead. You're on the radio, Dennis. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, yes, good morning, Nick. We see pictures and films of these dinghies coming across the channel. Yep. Well, I've not heard anybody mention the fact that where are they getting these dinghies from? Who's making them? Who's supplying them? Surely they
don't
can
know
target
the manufacturers. What? Why do you ask?
Well, I'm just saying, if they could target who's supplying these dinghies, then they wouldn't have the ability to cross the channel in a dinghy, because they wouldn't be able to get hold of them. So I'm just wondering where they get them from.
But the trouble is, wouldn't they, if you're that kind of lucrative business where I understand you can charge 5,000-10,000 euros a head, you'll just have a front man, won't you, to buy the dinghy? I don't think you'll say, turn up and say, hello, I'm a people trafficker, can I have half a dozen dinghies? Isn't that the reality, do you think?
Well, there must be some sort of identifier on the dinghies, a serial number or a manufacturer, or they must be getting them from somewhere, a warehouse. And I just thought if they could track that down and stop the supply of them, then they wouldn't have the ability to cross.
I remember the former Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, saying that they were trying to look at the manufacture of the engines, the outboard motors, and that was
taking
them. I think that was either taking them to Turkey or Germany. I can't remember which. So, listen, I tell you what, next time I speak to a government minister, clearly it is a problem. You see that as one of the solutions to try and cut it off at source, effectively, the manufacture of the dinghies.
Yeah, if they can't get across the channel, they can't get the dinghies across, then they'll have to probably go to wooden boats, but, you know, that's even worse.
Yeah,
but
Let me ask you this lastly. Do you think, if I can address it as the pull factor, there is too much of a pull factor? People are drawn here because of what awaits them when they get here?
I'm not really sure, really. I don't know.
You want to look at the dinghies, and it's a fair point. Dennis, thank you for that. Anne and St Albans, Javid's shortening his holiday was a noble gesture, but it didn't stop the boats. No government can stop them. While we are subject to the ECHR, the Tories broke their promise to take us out and sank without trace at the last general election. Bob says, do you remember when the Labour Party came to power? They were within weeks boasting how they were deporting up to 30,000 asylum seekers. Now they've gone silent. Not a word uttered by any of the politicians. Also, I thought the Home Secretary was strong, but I think she's been got at by her own ministers. More calls on that. Rob, you will be the next caller. See if you have an idea. The three principles, really, then now being put forward by the Conservatives, who did have a number of years to put this right, I do acknowledge. Well, they would argue the rate at which people are arriving was nothing like the rate at which they're arriving now, so let's get those cases out there, is one, you bring in a Rwanda Star scheme. Two, you leave the ECHR. Three, you address the so-called pull factor. You don't make it as attractive for people to get here. Rob, you'll be the caller on that. 8:23 is the time. Now to other matters and a story you've heard mentioned already on the LBC News bulletins. A woman has described a serious security failure at a Travelodge hotel in York after a man who was harassing her was given a key to her room and walked in on her naked. The woman in her late 30s, who we'll call Lucy to protect her identity, spoke with LBC after learning of a similar case at a Travelodge in Maidenhead. Here with all the details, LBC's correspondent Emma Corr. Emma.
Nick, a woman has told us a man who appeared drunk and was harassing her in a hotel corridor was given access to her room by Travelodge staff. Lucy is sharing what happened to her for the first time. She says she was staying alone at a Travelodge in central York last June when the man walked into her room as she was undressing.
I heard him say, "Oh, she's in room 260. That made me really uncomfortable. My door opens. I managed to run and shut the door on him and close it, and I was screaming."
Lucy says she was later told staff had given the man a key and believes proper checks weren't carried out before he was allowed access. She's told us she was deeply distressed, not just by what happened, but by the company's response afterwards, which included a partial refund for her stay.
They just said they recognised him. He was a guest, so that was enough. I obviously felt like I could have been sexually assaulted. It was like, we've dealt with it. We don't want to an ongoing conversation with you. It wasn't heartfelt. It wasn't a phone call.
Well, Travelodge have told us that this shouldn't have happened to Lucy, and it was a significant cause for concern. But Nick, this isn't an isolated case. It's now the latest in a series of reported security concerns involving the Travelodge chain. Back in December 2022, at a Travelodge in Maidenhead, a woman was sexually assaulted after a stranger was given access to her room. We've spoken to her, and we're calling her Emily. She says the man told staff he was her boyfriend and was then given a key to her room. He has since been jailed. But she told us she felt seriously let down by how the situation was handled and was also left without answers for months, including how long the man had been in her room.
I literally woke up when I heard like a voice, and he was literally in my bed against me. For the situation to then be offered £30 refund as if I've like had an issue with the door or something, or like the bed, or it's just insulting. You are the most vulnerable when you're asleep, and you know you should feel as safe as you do when you're at home and you've locked the door.
Well, Travelodge say their handling of both cases was inappropriate and they have apologised, and they say they've now changed room key procedures so keys can only be issued with explicit guest permission and are conducting an independent review. But both women say that amid growing concerns around violence against women and girls, stronger safeguards are needed across the hotel industry, something now being raised in Westminster. And Lucy says she's disappointed stronger security measures weren't introduced after the 2022 case, which she believes would have prevented what happened to her last year.
Emma Corr reporting, 8:26. Two other matters. Rob's in Arbroath. Rob, that number, 200,000, probably get there within days. What needs to be done now? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. You may be aware, I have rung in just once before on this.
Okay,
I'm actually a senior manager. I was a senior manager on the senior management team of the Asylum Directorate in Croydon.
Oh, right.
Providing immigration, asylum immigration advice to caseworkers considering claims. I myself considered thousands of claims over the years. I can honestly say to you that I was also charged with helping to reduce a backlog of over 750,000 cases, and that was back in 2008. So what signifies, Nick, is that the system's been broken. It's been broken for a long time. It's not something new. We need a new system. I would suggest...
What does that new system look like?
Yeah, well, to minimise risk, etc., what I would do is, first of all, apart from the ECHR, which is an issue, taking us out of that... Well, I would suggest that we would need to look at revisiting the 1951 outdated UN Convention relating to status of refugees, where we have an obligation to consider asylum applicants that arrive in the UK, even if they've arrived illegally, and not necessarily prejudice their claims for that reason.
What would 1951 mean in 2026? What would that provide for?
Well, the 1951 convention in 2026 provides for the UK to be allowed to, and it's necessary to consider any asylum applicant that pitches up in the UK their asylum claim, if they claim asylum. And we need to change that because my suggestion would be that rather than allowing people arriving illegally to claim asylum, well, we do have legislation to deal with that. We have the 1971 Immigration Act, Section 24, which provides that people arriving illegally should be prosecuted. Mm. And we only use that administratively, usually, because we use that against people, smugglers, and people that keep coming back. But
all right, I'm going to look up the 90. Please excuse me moving on, Rob. Thanks to hear from you. Good to hear from you again, but I must get other people's voices on the radio. That's what we're about in the morning. Rob, I'm going to look up that 1951 treaty at the end of the show so I know more. Thanks for your input on that. 8:28. Colin in Dover, appropriate enough. Colin, you're on the radio. Your view. Good morning.
Good morning. The thing is, I worked down the docks.
Oh, yes.
For ages before all this boat crisis started.
Yes.
And basically, the people that wanted to come to this country came through immigration on the boats.
Sorry, do you mean the dinghies or the ferries?
On the ferries, yes.
Well, they can't legally board the ferry, of course.
Well, they could in those days.
Right.
And
but it's the small boats they come in now, sir, of course. They come on now, of course.
Yes, austerity changed all that.
Sorry, I don't see how austerity has affected the dinghy crossings.
Well, the Conservatives merged the border force with the customs and immigration.
But lastly, Colin, how does that affect people setting off from Calais?
How does it set off?
Yeah, no. Well, how does that affect? Because it doesn't matter. I hear what you're saying, and you're probably right. But they would have still come, irrespective of whether we had more border force officers or not, wouldn't they?
Well, we had benefit systems before.
All right.
You're claiming the benefit system is doing it.
Well,
we had benefit systems before that.
Yes, it's not just me. It's a lot of politicians say that the pull factor is too much. Colin, thanks for your input on that. We'll take more calls on this. Also, coming up after the news,
they haven't stopped bringing lorries of hardcore and things like that in since Saturday morning, really.
And is the community going to try and do something?
Hopefully, yes. But what, we don't know.
They're called land grabs, where it would appear groups of travellers choose a bank holiday weekend to move in, and as that resident there in a site near Essex says, effectively, they build their very own site over those few days. We'll have more on that after this. It's 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. The news, Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is bringing together leaders from across public life for a summit aimed at tackling anti-Semitism. Sir Keir Starmer will tell the meeting in Downing Street this morning that recent attacks on the Jewish community have turned the issue into a crisis. Iran says clashes with the US Navy around the Strait of Hormuz show there's no military solution to the conflict. But Tehran has warned that the US operation to try and reopen the waterway risks dragging America back into a quagmire. And the community secretary has told Nick that he doesn't recognise reports that some Labour backbenchers are planning to try and force Sir Keir Starmer to set out a timeline for his resignation. It follows reports over the bank holiday weekend that a number of his rivals are plotting to try and remove him after the local elections. LBC weather, a mix of sunshine and showers across the UK, some wintry downpours possible in northern Scotland, a warm day for most, a high of 18 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
We've just been told that inflation could rise by 7% the start of next year. The cost of the Iran war is hitting us so hard, but Trump seems to have no plans to see it ended.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap. and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorized for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Noticed a change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, so another weekend, another so-called land grab, where reportedly travellers see some open land or whatever it might be and use those 3 days, although of course when it was Easter it was a 4 day breakdown in Kent, to move in. LBC's East of England correspondent Shivani Sharma joins us from the latest site, Willows Green in Essex, and joins us this morning. Shivani, good morning.
Nick, good morning. As you say, it's being described as a bank holiday land grab because whilst many of us were winding down for the long weekend, on Friday night, under the cover of darkness, more than 30 vehicles, cars, vans, diggers, descended onto this hamlet, Willows Green, a 4-acre wildlife hotspot, home to rare albino fallow deer. And the individuals driving those vehicles began digging up the land here and laying down tarmac. Now, we understand that this continued well into the night, with stunned locals capturing images on their phones. And just looking at the site now, I can see nearly half a dozen caravans here with the green land fully tarmacked over. Now, the local MP and Shadow Housing Secretary, James Cleverley, was here at the weekend. He says he believes there's been no planning consent for these building works over the weekend. He says it's completely unacceptable and that he's written to the Housing Secretary demanding answers.
But this is why we have got to take action to make sure that where building work happens like this, outside office hours, clearly seeking to game the system, that we are able to take decisive and quick action, because the local community here know that this is going to be disruptive to them. And anyone who's tried to get a builder to start work after hours on a Friday, on a bank holiday weekend, will know that there's something not right about this.
Now, the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, spoke to you a short while ago, Nick, and he's told you that incidents like these must be tackled swiftly.
Well, I mean, it happens throughout the year, to be honest, in different places, but you need the police to move in very, very quickly and remove them so it doesn't become an
option. Have they got the necessary powers, though, Secretary of State, to move these people on?
Well, what I know is when it happened in my constituency in a park, they were gone within days. So the powers must exist or the police couldn't have done it. So I don't know why they're going slow in this case.
Now, the assumption being made here is that members of the traveller community are behind this, that they waited until bank holiday when councils are obviously not operating to do this. And it wouldn't be the first time this strategy has been used. Over Easter bank holiday, we saw unauthorised encampments, as they're often called, popping up in places like Hertfordshire and Birmingham. And it will come as no surprise to you, Nick, that locals I've been speaking to here this morning are pretty furious.
It's not fair. See, we have planning permissions in place for a reason. The job I work in, we have to go through a lot of permissions just to build sites. And obviously, what a negative factor we have in the community. would it increase the risk on others and also the pollution that comes with it and fly tipping?
It happens every bank holiday, yes. And it's really not fair for the people, yes, who are around, is it?
And there was one built, yeah, near here, between here and Brentwood, done exactly the same way, and it's still there.
Yes.
Do you think more needs to be done?
Of course.
Yes.
For both sides, really.
They haven't stopped bringing lorries of hardcore and things like that in since Saturday morning, really. Well, they started Friday night, but a lot of us didn't know about that. But Saturday, yeah, it's all started coming in then.
And is the community going to try and do something?
Hopefully, yes. But what, we don't know. So I think we'll try and get on to the council this morning and see what they've got to do. I think James Cleverly was down here Saturday. So see if he can help as well. But who knows?
Now, those locals, Nick, say they warned Uttlesford Council that this would happen. The council previously said, should an authorised development occur, they'll respond in accordance with planning enforcement plans. No doubt, though, they'll have to make more of a statement today. Now, construction has taken place over the weekend.
LBC's Shivani Sharma reporting. James, I'm going to talk to you about small boats, and I want to get your point, but Adam in Chelmsford has phoned up because I think you have a relative. Is it your mother lives in the area where my colleague Shivani's just been? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Yeah, my mum lives there down on the road next to it. Oh. And
Has she phoned you about it on the weekend?
No, I was there when I saw it all. Oh. I saw all the trucks coming through, and there was hundreds of men. Basically, they built a massive fence all around the land, right, and the diggers were coming through at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and they've laid loads of tarmac and they've laid the base to put all their caravans on.
Right.
But the sad thing is, that land was not allowed to be built on because there was protected newts there, and they gone and built all over them.
Where were the police?
Oh, the police got called out because there was a bit of a fracas and they were getting threatening towards the residents because, right, obviously the residents were upset and the police just said, well, they can't do anything about it. Because apparently their travellers have actually bought the land. So they own the land. Yeah, they own the land.
But you can't just suddenly, I would have thought, decide to put tarmac on fields.
Oh, no. No, they haven't got the permissions to do it. But the issue we have is they own the land, so that's harder than just saying, oh, you've got to move on.
What's your mum saying? What's your mum planning to do?
Oh, well, she's devastated. Everyone around the estate or around that area is devastated because it's such a quiet area of loads of wildlife and, like, the noise. You wouldn't believe the noise of all the diggers going all through the bank holiday weekend, and they're just really upset because, not because they're there, just the way it's happened.
Of course. And did they work through the night then?
Yeah, they were working at 3 and 4 in the morning. The residents weren't able to sleep because all the big diggers were coming down this single-track road, and it was just horrendous, and it's still going on now.
They now will, I suppose, apply for retrospective planning permission, and that will go on, even if they get refused, it will go on for years before they're evicted.
Yeah, years. Yeah, it'll go on for years and years, and like I say, I've never seen a site change into basically a house in a state over a long weekend. There's so much fencing, there was just, you've got to give them their dues for the way they
build. The speed they move, yeah.
Oh, but yeah, it's just really upsetting for the community. And
what is the fence? Do they put chain link fencing up? What do they put up?
No, it's all like fencing, garden fencing, like 7-foot panel posts with all the, they're just literally all around.
I see, right.
And then it's all concreted over and all the caravans have now moved in.
And how many caravans would you say there are there? Roughly?
About 30, 40 now, I think.
It's a vast site, then. This is a huge bit of land.
Oh, yeah, and big mobile homes. You know the ones where they drive them down with flashing cars behind? Yeah, they're all on there as well now.
I mean, as you say, I am not condoning an illegal practice for a moment, but my God, they move quick, these people.
Oh, I've never seen anything like it. Never seen anything like it, but, yeah, it's...
All right. Best wishes to your mum. Obviously desperately upsetting for her. Adam, thank you. James in Kingston, thank you for holding on the line. We come back to this rather troubling figure, 200,000 arrivals. Do you see a solution?
I mean, really, I was just speaking to the
to my colleague,
the lady who, to your colleague, and I think the previous caller hit the nail on the head. Part of it, I mean, he said we need to deal with the source of the problem, i.e., trying to track
where they're buying the
these rubber dinghies.
Yeah.
But the other issue is, Nick, I mean, I don't want to name countries, but I've sat in the back of cabs or I've met people in other countries, and the first thing they say is, oh, you get a free house in the UK, or, you know, there's a lot of good benefits in the UK. And I think that's the key problem. We are paying more into the welfare system than we're collecting from income tax. I think it's about $300 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's forecasting, I think the Office of the budget are saying it's going to go up to about $407 billion next year. So the problem is the welfare state. We're just a nation of benefits. And I think that's the source. We've got to try and not eradicate it, but really clamp down on that. And if, until we do that, we're going to see the problems as we are now.
And also the pull factor then. I hear what you say about the manufacturer of the boats and possibly the manufacturer of the engines, but something to be done about the pull factor too as well, James?
When you say the pull factor, what are you...
The idea is, as many politicians say, these people think that when they get here, they'll be given accommodation, they'll be given a small allowance, but then they'll almost certainly have their claim accepted, and a life awaits them over here.
Exactly. That's the key here, and we need to really eradicate that. So if you're in Syria or Uganda or wherever you are, if you hear of these benefits, then you're just going to get on a boat because you know it's just worth taking the risk. And we have to, I mean, Shabana Mahmood, I know she was on your, you were speaking to her last week, but she didn't really mention anything about benefits or how we can kind of really tackle that. And I think that's the key here, Nick.
James, thank you. Have a good day. Mark in Chester, what do you think is the key, Mark? Good morning.
Morning. Morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
Well, I'd like to dispute the constant government ramblings. You had a minister on earlier on. Apparently now it's 60,000 that we've deported.
Yes.
Now, I don't think they are the boat people.
No, they won't be.
These are people with student visas, legitimately
right.
matured.
Yes.
And then there are some overstayers that need to go. Otherwise, 30 or 60,000, that is hundreds of flights, because you don't just put them all on one charter flight.
No.
And where are they going to? You're going to have security guards, by the way, you know, just for the safety of the air crew.
Yeah.
That should be televised every night, as should be the fact that the dinghies that they're towing into Dover or whatever should be chainsawed at the moment and the outboards crushed. The rumour is on the urban...
Were they already here, then?
...to France again. Oh, yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is the government are lying, saying 30 or 60,000 have been deported.
Yes.
Not those.
So there's no point crushing the engines once they get here, is there, do you think? Or...
Yeah, no, the rumours on the urban myth are they've seen them on transporters back onto ferries, you know, going off to Calais again. They've been reused.
I did say
urban myth, but I'd like to see demonstration of them being chainsawed and those engines crushed.
All right, okay. Might be worth having a report, have just a little nose around Dover docks and see exactly what's happening. Mark, thank you on that. Coming up after the news, the important issue, slowly, but it's glacier-like speed at which it's moving from the government, safety online for our children.
I've joined the Raise the Age campaign alongside dozens of bereaved families calling for a social media ban for under 16s. I'm online safety campaigner Lauren Cowell, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
And that's right after the 8:45 LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is bringing together leaders from policing, business and education in Downing Street this morning as part of efforts to try and tackle anti-Semitism. Iran says clashes with the US Navy around the Strait of Hormuz show there's no military solution to the conflict. And a cabinet minister has told Nick that he doesn't recognise reports that some Labour backbenchers are planning an open letter demanding a date for Sir Keir Starmer's resignation. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK, some wintry showers on higher ground in northern Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M1 southbound, Junction 1 at Staples Corner. A car's broken down and there are queues for at least a mile on the approach. Also, delays continue in West Croydon. Station Road is closed westbound because a bus has broken down. Very busy in Oxshott. Warren Lane is partially blocked both ways and that's after an accident. Now, these big problems on the trains do continue. No Gatwick Express services running between the airport and Brighton, and Southern and Thames Link aren't running between Three Bridges and Haywood Heath. It's because of an ongoing investigation. Southern are also disrupted. They can't run between Watford Junction and Shepherd's Bush. And severe delays on the Northern line between Camden Town and Kennington.
This is LBC.
At Tesco, we know that right now, every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials, so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See tesco.com/Aldi price match.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Ends Wednesday. Terms apply.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases, but our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
May we have your attention? Introducing the Volkswagen May event. Get an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative across the range, including the amazing Golf, Tiguan and all-electric ID3. Major. I said it was in May, right?
Yes.
Ends Monday the 18th of May. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer. You may just find the car you've been looking for.
Stop it.
Participating retailers. Excludes T-Roc ID bars and Golf GTI 50. ID3 from stock only. Indemnities may be required. Registered by 30th of August. Volkswagen Finance.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
The people of Britain have bought loads of noise-cancelling headphones. With a Barclaycard Rewards credit card, you could get cash back on eligible purchases and no fees on spending overseas. What you buy is your business. Rewarding you is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 28.9% APR representative variable and 28.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's coming up on 8.50. Now, you know how importantly we deal with the issue of online safety here at LBC. Indeed, we've had special campaigning days. And on some of those days, I've been privileged to speak with Ellen Room. I remind you, she lost her 14-year-old son in a challenge we might talk about. Well, although it's for all the wrong reasons, it's good to see you now at last in the studio. Ellen, thank you for coming by. And joining you is a fellow campaigner, Lauren Cowell. Lauren, I know you take this very seriously as well, and I read a newspaper article about you and your lad and how reaching a similar sort of age. If it's okay, I'm going to start with Ellen. Ellen Rim, thank you. So we saw movement of sort from the government. What do you take from what they said? How close do you think we're getting?
Well, not close enough, in my opinion. So there's so much harm online that the government are adamant they want to finish this consultation. So that finishes on the 26th of May. But we actually need the government to step up now. We need them to actually look at what are they going to do and remove some of the harmful features and really tighten up on these platforms. We've still got children being affected and we've still got children dying.
Lauren, I'm concerned that, and I do a lot of these sort of political stories, when they can, they waffle. Do you fear there might be waffling going on here?
I've never seen so much waffling in my life. I mean, it's like I'm a very direct person. I just like to kind of cut to the chase. And, you know, since I got involved in this campaign, there has been some movement, and I think that's great. And we're all very happy about that. But I think it just, for me, it feels like, why are we waiting any longer? We have all of the evidence. We have enough evidence. We've got over 27 bereaved families in this country alone who have suffered the ultimate consequences and devastation of what can happen with what we know online. And so with that, with all the health professionals and the frontline medical professionals who are doing research every day in this topic, why are we waiting? We don't have time to wait any longer. So yes, I do feel there's quite a lot of waffling, and we really need answers. I think as a parent, I want answers.
How would you describe Ellen as a campaigner?
Oh my goodness. We don't have enough time on this program to talk about Ellen being just the most incredible woman or person really that I've ever met. And I think that is one of the biggest reasons why I stepped in to this level or degree of, you know, commitment that I have, because I'm so overwhelmingly impressed and in awe of her, quite frankly. We've become really, really close, actually.
I can see that. We
feel like crying now. What's this about? Like, it's about online safety, not me. Yeah.
Okay, and how doughty a campaigner and a supporter is Lauren?
Oh, honestly, we've only known each other for a few months, but we're just really gelled, and she's really so passionate. She's, you know, between us, we both have so much drive and passion. We're quite similar. We both talk too quick, probably, and
ADHD.
Like, how much can we get out there and how much can we say? But it's so important, and we're so, both of us, and Lauren's come aboard, and so determined to make a difference. You know, we have to do something, and it's not about we're going to wait. We need it doing now, and if we could make it happen now, we'd be pressing that button, but it's not there.
Is this the big tobacco moment?
Yes, very much so.
Absolutely.
So the lawyers,
to you in a moment, Lauren. Just let Ellen expand, and then I'll come into you. Just
so the lawyers in America, so are the same lawyers that are representing me against TikTok in Delaware. So I'm one of the first British parents to sue in TikTok. Sorry, sue in Delaware.
Yeah.
But they were the ones that represented this case in LA, and all the documents that have come out of it, they have proved that there is so much harm on these platforms. The internal documents released talking about groomers they know on their platforms, that they are being addicted by design, they are being fed content that they knew about. Instagram, for example, on one of the documents said that there are 500,000 victims a day that are being fed content. If you multiply that up, there are millions and millions of children being affected, and they know about it, and they're hiding it. And that has come out in these court hearings. You know, it's just, yeah.
I read a piece, Lauren, about you last week. How do you manage your lads' social media?
So I have two children. Access. My 20-year-old, he only got Instagram and social media, Snapchat, when he turned 18. So that's Adam. And then Eric, he's 12. Mm-hmm. We decided to give him a phone just recently, about a month ago, during this whole campaigning thing that I've been doing. But his phone, it only enables him to text and WhatsApp, and that is it. There's no social media, and he will definitely not be having any access.
How are you going to control that when it becomes 13, 14, 15, 16? Did you control it with your other lad as he came through his late teens?
Well, he just wasn't really that bothered by it. And it only was when he left to go off to uni that he decided to get social media for himself. And at that point, I mean, I think this is what we're really saying here, is that if it were up to me, I would raise the age to 18, you know, if these harmful and addictive features still existed. If they can remove those features and they could make the platform safe, then I think we would all be having a very different conversation. But as it stands and as it is now, I don't feel that any child under the age minimum of 16 should be on these platforms. And I think for me, keeping Eric off of it as long as possible is something that I feel very strongly about as a parent.
What would your message be to other mums?
Well, I think for other mums, paying attention and not being naive to think that this, what happened to Ellen and some of the other families, can't happen to them. I mean, that is at the very extreme end, of course. You know, we're talking about the loss of a child, which is the ultimate tragedy and just something that you cannot comprehend or even want to think about as a parent. But it's all the other stuff in between. And it's quite clear that the content that they're being exposed to is just not inappropriate, and it's not safe for young children. They don't have the brain capacity, the mental capacity to process these things, and they shouldn't be exposed to it.
Let's come back to you, Ellen, if I can. I remember speaking one time when you were at number 10 Downing Street, and I was struck by the fact that the Prime Minister declined to meet you or any of your fellow campaigners. I think it was 15 in total, the total number. And I did talk to Wes Streeting. Mm. I understand Mr. Streeting has then subsequently got back to you.
That's correct, yes. I've got a meeting on the, I think it's the 2nd of June.
What do you want to explore with the Health Secretary?
Well, I mean, I'd love the chance with the Prime Minister, but I really want to get our stories across. As a group of bereaved parents, we've got a whole range of stories about whether children were groomed online, whether they've dealt with a challenge, and just actually, these are real children. This is really happening. And just take on board our point of view. They'll listen to the big tech companies, but they won't listen to us as bereaved parents. I don't have any other children to save. I don't have any children to make a difference. I do want to get my point across to make a difference for the children that are still here.
Lauren, what do you make of the fact that the PM hasn't met with your friend and others?
It is very disappointing. I mean, that's putting it mildly. I think that the parents who've lost children, Ellen included, I think they have every right and they deserve to be heard and to be seen. And I think if it were me, I would be furious. I really would. I mean, I'm furious, and it's not even me. I'm very upset about it.
What would you say to him?
To the Prime Minister? Uh-huh. Well, I would say...
Give us a meeting.
I would say to the Prime Minister, please, you know, don't brush this under the rug. I think seeing these families, as I've done, hearing their stories, looking them in the eyes and giving them that respect that they deserve just to hear the stories and hear what they have to say, I think it's really, really important.
But Ellen's is a fair point, isn't it, Ron? He meets with the tech companies. He doesn't meet with the mums and the dads, which seems extraordinary to square.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more. So the consultation goes till May the 26th, is that right?
Yes,
Ellen?
That's correct.
What do listeners need to do? What do people need to do during that time?
So there's a website you can log on, and there's a whole range of questions. I think it takes, I can't remember how long it takes, half an hour or something to go through. There's a lot of questions, I think 62. But they are asking even 10-year-olds, one of the questions for 10-year-olds is, do you think it's appropriate to send nude pictures? We're asking 10-year-olds, eh? That's illegal. And why are we asking 10-year-olds that? Because that's the starting age for the consultation. But, I mean, I would get them, if anybody wants to, go on and please register any of your concerns of these things. Apparently they're going to be listened to, and apparently at the end of the summer we should be hearing feedback from them. So
you say apparently.
I can sense there's
a heavy... Yeah, well, be honest.
I am.
It's just... waffle.
So I've heard that supposedly, and I don't know how true it is, that AI is going to analyse the research or the answers that come in. Supposedly they're going to come up with something, and what are they going to come up with? We know about the harm. Why are we not doing something now? Why do we need some more questions answered before we do something?
So let's go in baby steps. What, for both of you, I'll start with you, Lauren, if I may. What's the next attainable goal? Where do we need to get to, do you think?
So I think that people need to understand, because we had a little bit of a victory a couple of weeks ago, and that was major. Because I don't believe that ever before has that been said.
This is the Lord Nash bill we're talking about.
Well, yes, but in the House of Commons, because it's gone back and forth with this political ping pong four times. And each time the House of Lords said yes to raising the age, but the House of Commons rejected it over and over and over. So this last time was the first time since we've been doing this that they have committed to doing something. But I think a lot of people out there, they feel, well, this is done now. The government, they're doing it. So they feel that maybe it's over and nothing more needs to be done. But that isn't true. We are working with the Raise the Age campaign, and we don't know exactly yet when the time is going to come that we're going to need to put the massive amount of pressure again on the government and on everybody to finalize this consultation and to give us some answers as to what they are going to do. But we are going to need a big push, and I think that is the thing that we need to kind of let everybody know right now, is that this isn't over yet, and we still need another push and to get the government to hold them to their word. But what that is, we don't know. We just want to know.
What does that push look like? What can I do to help?
Well, I think once the politicians actually finished this consultation and said, these are what we need to deal with, they know. I mean, the PM's already talked about it, about some of the addictive features, auto-scrolling, keeping people on the platform, all those things, stranger danger, stranger pairing, children, live location. You know, why have we got paedophiles being able to know exactly where your child is? Why have we not switched that off? I don't understand why that's still there.
See, here's my concern or fear. I think they just want it biffed into the long grass.
Well, yeah.
Don't you?
But why? Because they're getting funding from tech companies? Why are they doing that?
I can't possibly answer. It would seem to be such... And you rightly, Lauren, you mentioned the number of people who've lost their lives. It would seem... absolutely that you would go for this straight away, wouldn't it, to tackle it?
100%. And I think that the other thing that's really important to note is that with some of the internal documents that we've seen and we know about, the tech companies did say that until they're made to do something about this, they're not going to do anything about it. And I think that is the key thing to note, which is that they can do something about it. They absolutely have the power. They have the resources. I mean, they're some of the wealthiest companies in the entire world with all the resources. So other countries have, you were mentioning...
Brazil have such tighter age restriction things.
Right?
But they are choosing not to do it until they're forced to do it. So we need to force them.
That's why we need to force.
And if this was a product or a toy that was killing children, it would be recalled. It would be recalled, and they'd say, this is your responsibility, you fix it. And it needs to be on the technology companies to say, this is your responsibility, you fix it.
Well, let's catch up towards the end of this month then, shall we, either over the phone
or
have. And let's, do you know what strikes me, though? The friendship and the kinship born of such tragedy... that you endured, and look how you two guys have found each other. It's incredible.
It really is.
The way you're united.
Honestly, Lauren has been massively supportive.
I made Ellen a promise, and I said when I got involved and I heard her story, and I just said, I'm sticking to you like glue. And we are not, I mean, she sleeps over all the time. We have these like pajama parties.
I was at their house when they weren't even there yesterday, and this is just very bizarre.
Like, just make yourself at home.
You've got a key to the house.
Yeah, I don't even have a key to the house. Yeah. She has one now. But yeah, no, I'm not giving up. We're not going away. And yeah,
we're going to make a difference.
I can tell that. It's. it absolutely radiates. It's just, it's a tragedy that got you together, but your determination radiates. Been a privilege. Thanks so much, ladies. I'm only ever an email away if you need any help.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And last, good to meet you.
You're not as scary as everyone says you are.
Let's not to get out there. Edit that bit out. Eleanor and Ron Cowell, thank you so much. It's LBC, 1 minute after nine.
Thank you.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister is bringing together leaders from across public life for a summit this morning aimed at tackling anti-Semitism. Sir Keir Starmer will tell the meeting that recent attacks on the Jewish community have turned the issue into a crisis. Last week, two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green in North London. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more details.
The government's released an extra £1 million for councils to use in tackling anti-Semitism, as this morning leaders from health, business and education sectors are hauled into Downing Street to talk solutions. The Prime Minister says attacks on British Jews are everyone's problem as he pushes for action to match warm words. That's something Jewish groups say has been severely lacking. Fraser Knight, LBC, Downing Street.
Iran's foreign minister says America risks being dragged back into a quagmire with its latest plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Donald Trump's so-called Operation Freedom aims to ensure that commercial ships can use the vital oil route. The US president has also warned that any attacks on US ships will result in Iran being blown off the face of the earth. Backbench Labour MPs are understood to be planning an open letter to try and force Sir Keir Starmer to set out a timeline for his resignation. It follows reports that a number of his rivals are plotting to try and remove him after the local elections. Sir Keir has urged his party to avoid political infighting and unite. The Communities Secretary Steve Reeves told Nick this morning he doesn't recognise reports of unrest.
What the vast majority of us want to happen is for this psychodrama that we keep reading about in the press to come to an end. We want to get on and focus on the cost of living crisis and improving our public services.
But why is he so unpopular then? If you've increased money to pensions, I don't understand. Why does it follow he's so desperately unpopular?
Well, we've got a five-year term. It takes time to make the change people want to see, and it takes time to communicate that change.
Reports found higher living costs, debt and insecure work are leading to more exploitation of British people. The government says it is working with modern slavery survivors to improve policy. New figures suggest around two pubs closed each day in the first quarter of this year. The British Beer and Pub Association say they face pressures from higher taxation. The industry bodies warned it equates to the loss of around 2,400 jobs. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 101 at 10,259. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK through today. Some wintry showers possible on higher ground for northern Scotland. A warm day for most, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So we need a social media wrap-up for the Work Bake Off. Any takers?
I can design posts on Canva.
I can also design posts on Canva.
Well, I can design posts with the jam tart theme on Canva.
That's great. I can design posts with the jam tart theme and generate a moving image of a jam roly-poly rolling on Canva.
Well, I can design posts and create a 3D headline that says Bake Your Tarts Out on Canva.
I can design posts and create a 3D headline and turn your face into a Bakewell tart on Canva.
All right, calm down.
With a huge range of easy-to-use design AI tools, anyone can with Canva.
I can slice a video of a croquembouche.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 5 minutes after nine on Tuesday, May the 5th, coming up in this hour as rumours swirl. The Prime Minister is toxic. There needs to be a deal. We need his date of resignation to continue our support, reportedly, say backbenchers. I'll be asking if there was a new name at the top, whether it was Angela Rayner, Wes Streeting, whoever it might be, would it make a difference, particularly if you are a Labour supporter? In other news, the Royal Navy warship crisis deepens. Another crippled vessel is effectively written off, so that question I put the Defence Secretary, John Healey, becomes ever more pertinent. How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
Full confidence, really, there, haven't you? No problems at all. And how expensive is your last vet bill? A 2.5-year investigation into the veterinary service market has probably backfired, because it would appear the independent vets, the ones that we're all persuaded really to go after, rather than these, in many cases, American-owned companies, they're now putting their prices up. So we'll get in and among the fees charged for your cat, your cats, your dogs, your rabbits, or any other pet.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I said it before, I'll say it again. The local elections in England, the national elections, of course, in Wales and in Scotland, just days away, and a slew of front pages spelling out nothing but grim news for the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. I'll start with the Labour-supporting Daily Mirror. I remind you, the Labour-supporting Daily Mirror, who surveyed their own readers, and, as I told you, and if you were listening in the first hour, the popularity, such as it is at an all-time low. Personal approval ratings, Zach Polansky and Sir Ed Davey, the Greens and Lib Dems, respectively, -8. Nigel Farage, Reform UK, -3. Kemi Badenoch for the Conservatives, -2. Keir Starmer, -44. That's the Daily Mirror, the Labour-supporting Daily Mirror. Meanwhile, the Daily Telegraph has the story that toxic Starmer, as they're calling him, was kept away from local elections. They've done their research. They've shown that while Nigel Farage has attended 71 events for the local and national elections in Wales and Scotland, Kemi Badenoch has been out 41 times, Sir Keir 11. Now, I take on board he does have a country to run, but... And then lastly, well, I could go on, but let's go to the Times. Labour MPs are discussing plans to demand Keir Starmer set a date for his resignation. It's likened to the putsch by Gordon Brown's allies against Tony Blair some 20 or so years ago. So where did it all go wrong? Well, Sir Keir vowed to end the factionalism in the Labour Party, end the chaos of the Conservative government as he launched his leadership campaign January 2020.
We have Johnson as our Prime Minister. Boris Johnson as our Prime Minister. Takes some getting used to. Boris Johnson. The man of no principles, no moral compass, who will go anywhere to stay in power. And his party's going to the right. And he will go to the right. He has a majority. But he does not have a licence to do damage to our communities and damage to our countries, and it's our job to hold him to account and to be a very, very effective opposition.
It was difficult campaigning through COVID times, credit to him, but he did win Sir Keir Starmer's acceptance speech April 2020.
It is the honour and the privilege of my life to be elected as leader of the Labour Party. It comes at a moment like none other in our lifetime. Coronavirus has brought normal life to a halt. Our cities, our towns and our villages are silent. Our roads deserted. Public life has all but come to a standstill. And we're missing each other. I will lead this great party into a new era with confidence and with hope, so that when the time comes, we can serve our country again in government.
And that became reality a little over 4 years later.
Now our country has voted decisively for change, for national renewal and a return of politics to public service. If you voted Labour yesterday, we will carry the responsibility of your trust as we rebuild our country. But whether you voted Labour or not, in fact, especially if you did not, I say to you directly, my government will serve you. Politics can be a force for good. We will show that. We've changed the Labour Party, returned it to service, and that is how we will govern. Country first, party second.
And here we are, less than 2 years on, and in part, thanks to the scandal around Peter Mandelson's appointment as US ambassador, for some the wheels have started to fall off. And addressing that issue, Mandelson, the PM was even laughed at the House of Commons.
Mr. Speaker, I know many members across the House will find these facts to be incredible. To that, I can only say they are right. It beggars belief that throughout the whole timeline of events, officials in the Foreign Office saw fit to withhold this information from the most senior ministers in our system in government. That is not how the vast majority of people in this country expect politics, government, or accountability to work.
I think as a Prime Minister, you probably want to be loved or adored. You will have to accept you might be hated, but to be laughed at, that's not really where you want to be going, is it? Scarlett Maguire, political commentator, former communications advisor of the Labour Party. No shortage of headlines today about a toxic PM, a putsch on the way, Labour MPs demanding a resignation. What do you take from it, Scarlett? You've been a political watcher for a year or two.
Okay, there is no question that Keir is not popular, is not popular with the people, that the results this week from local elections and Scotland and Wales are going to be terrible, right? But the question is what happens next? And the first thing is that actually all the other three major contenders, Angela Rayner, Wes Streeting and Andy Burnham, all have enormous problems. Andy Burnham's biggest problem is actually getting to be, getting into Parliament. But also, actually, when I look at the other leaders of other political parties, they have, I mean, you know, they have much bigger problems. I mean, of course, Keir is the most well-known and therefore the most disliked. But, you know, you have Zach Polanski, who seems to have no idea about, you know, anti-Semitism. You have, and it's quite interesting listening to Keir saying, you know, if you didn't vote for me, I'll do something. And Nigel Farage goes, if you don't vote for me, I'm going to put an immigration detention centre in your town. I mean, you know, these are children, right? And we've got a very, very difficult country to run.
Yep.
At the moment, terribly difficult thing, and we've got to have a grown-up in charge.
Different name on the front door make much of a difference, Scarlett, if it said Burnham or Rayner?
I'm really not sure at the moment. I mean, I think that's why nothing has happened. Now, what will happen this weekend is another matter. There is no question we are going to get trounced. I mean, you might have Labour people saying not a vote has been cast, but
I think you and I are realistic enough to know the truth of what you're saying here, Scarlett. We've been around long enough.
And so the question is has it been baked in because everybody knows it and nothing has been done, or are people waiting until this weekend? And then the troops will gather. I mean, and also, how much is pure media speculation? I mean, you know, particularly the Sunday newspapers, you read them and you know the editor said to the political people, you know, this is the story I want, and they write it. And I read it and I go, but there's nobody saying
anything. This is your forte. Can I put, as the former communications advisor to the party, can I put it to you that the party came into government with very poor comms strategy and they've never really been able to stop the rot? They have been found wanting at some point in that particular area.
Yeah, but I also think that the Ming Vars strategy was a disaster, because the problem is that Keir won an election with people voting against other people. I mean, you know, it was very, very easy. Almost anybody
just to explain the Ming Vars. All he had to do was walk carefully across the floor, nursing a Ming Vars, and then he gets the goal. He gets there. He gets the PM.
And not say anything. Sorry, the Ming Vars strategy is. I won't say anything. I won't say anything brave. I won't say anything controversial. I won't say what I stand for.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And what happened was that, you know, yes, I mean, the Tories were disastrous.
Everybody
knows that.
Yep.
And so he won. But what he didn't have was a lot of people going, I mean, you know, when Tony Blair won, I mean, people thought there were going to be new hospitals the next day. I mean, more people said they voted for Tony Blair than could possibly have done so 3 months after he was elected. This didn't happen with Keir. And that was a problem. And actually, what one is hoping is that Keir has broken out of this straitjacket now and actually will start saying what he believes in.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Scarlett, have yourself a good week. Thank you. You're going to be busy watching those as we build up to and then watching the results come in. Scarlett Maguire, political commentator, former communications advisor to the Labour Party, calling all Labour supporters, calling all voters. If, as I say again, there was a different name on the front door, would it make that much difference? The idea he now, as Sir Tony Blair, Sir Tony Blair had to give the date of his resignation. And why is he so extraordinarily unpopular? We'll take your views on that. It's 9:16, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is bringing together leaders from across public life for a summit aimed at tackling anti-Semitism. A man who was shot at a barbecue in Brixton in South London over the bank holiday weekend has died. And online safety campaigners have told LBC that they're concerned ministers are dragging their feet over new safeguards. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK, some wintry showers for northern Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, Gatwick Express services are running between the airport and Brighton, and Thames Link and Southern services are suspended between Haywards Heath and Three Bridges. It's because of an ongoing investigation. Southern services aren't running between Watford Junction and Shepherd's Bush, but that's a separate problem that's still ongoing. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Northern Line and minor delays on the Central Line, and there are still some minor delays on the Elizabeth Line, but they are starting to clear. On the roads, there are delays on the M1 southbound of about a mile to Junction 1 at Staples Corner, and that was after a car broke down earlier. Also delays on the M25 anti-clockwise to Junction 20 at Kings Langley because a van's broken down.
This is LBC.
Welcome back to Costa Coffee's Iced Coffee Forecast, here to update you on the week ahead. Today, there'll be unexpected adventures moving in from the east, with high chances of bumping into friends and conversations that go on longer than planned. Later this week, expect a refreshing iced coffee, made for picnics with picky bits and nowhere to be until 6. Because whatever the weather, with a Costa iced coffee made with heart in hand, the summer moments we love last. Costa iced coffee, made for summer.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
A box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
You've packed enough suitcases to know quality when you see it. Well, Saga Travel Insurance has been named a Which Best Buy. And now get 20% off when you buy before the 11th of June. Search Saga Travel Insurance for a quote today. New policies only. Standard and Plus are Which Best Buys May 2025. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Those headlines then, what impact would it have? And if you are a Labour supporter, would a change at the top make that much difference? Matthew at Heathrow, you're on the radio, Matthew. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, hi, Mick.
Hello, sir.
I think Keir's gone wrong because since he's been Prime Minister, he hasn't come to LBC and...
no, I think once.
So we could talk to him. I mean, I've actually...
What would you like to ask him? What would you want to ask him? Let's play make-believe that he's here. What's your question?
Well, I would ask him, why doesn't he communicate with us more? I mean, when he was doing Call Care, and we was able to talk to him, and, I supported him. I wasn't a Labour supporter, but I supported him to be Prime Minister. I do want him to stay Prime Minister, because I think we've got an honest person there, and that's what the country does need at the moment, since we have the Conservatives.
Okay, and by the way, I do think he's honest, and some of the sort of issues that engulf previous prime ministers, I don't think necessarily would land at Sir Keir's door. But having said that, what's he actually achieving for the country?
Well, yeah, that's what I think. I think he's got to come to LBC, call the prime minister at least once a month, and we could question him, and you know, we could tell him what we think, and he could give us his answers.
Matthew, if it happens, we'll be welcoming you to put in the calls. Let's go to social media. I've not done enough about that. Let me feature just some of those before we move on. Tom says, Keir Starmer is unpopular because he's a liar. He lied with his pledges to become Labour leader. He lied in the manifesto to become PM, and he's been lying to me, to us, about Peter Mandelson. A different name on the door might be more honest, which is a change worth making. Steve, in London, big place, says the only thing Labour has changed is the tax rates, and thank them for that. Same subject, this comes in. Do remember to sign them. Steve has. Starmer is definitely going to be a disaster. Promised everything, you turned on everything. Well, of course, to our political pundit Scarlett's point, we never did really know what he stood for. All we knew was that he wasn't Rishi Sunak, which, unsurprisingly, was enough to get him over the line those years ago. But it does seem to be unravelling a little bit now, doesn't it? Something else that's unravelling, sadly, is the Royal Navy. And even as I start this conversation, I want to make it plain, this is no in any way intended as a slight against the brave men and women who serve in the senior service or any of the others. It is rather the state of the Navy, as the fleet of frigates was reduced to just five after the withdrawal of HMS Iron Duke. The warship will be retired due to technical issues 3 years after a £103 million refit. 3 years. That would be, obviously, we don't spend that much on a car, but you had a car fully serviced at a cost of a few thousand pounds, and you scrapped it 3 years later. Who's in charge of all the purchasing? Well, who's in charge of the Royal Navy? That would be the Defence Secretary, John Healey. We chatted about its capability back in March. How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government. And as I say, the number of mine hunters have been cut by more than a half. And so that we can meet not just the threats we face now, but the threats in the future, we're doubling down on some of the uncrewed mine hunting capabilities. And I have some of them already pre-positioned in the Middle East. But we can't turn this round overnight. We're putting the investment in now that will help us fix this.
But if we've got a fleet of 17, Mr. Healey, if we've got a fleet of 17 in total, where are they all?
Well, every nation, with every piece of its military kit, has some in operation, some on deployment, some in states of readiness, some being repaired and maintained.
We only have one in operation.
Regular rhythm that is common to military planning.
We only have HMS Draken in operation down there now. Where are all the others? Are all the others being repaired in some way, shape or form?
I'm proud of what we're able to do. I'm proud of the fact that the forces have risen to the challenges in the Middle East.
I know, sir, but are the others all being repaired, or are they not functioning correctly? 17 vessels. We would have known for months that we were heading this operation in April. Why did it not occur to someone, well, we're going to need one of our warships because we're commanding the operation in April, let's make sure it's available. Why did that not occur to anyone?
We were preparing Dragon for that flagship role.
So we have one warship available because Dragon had to go, obviously, down to Cyprus.
I have to make decisions based on what we've got.
Let's turn to Major General Jonathan Shaw. Now, the Major General was a former Assistant Chief of the Defence Staff at the Ministry of Defence, now consultant for MAST Security, and joins me now. Major General, what did we learn from the recent SDR, Strategic Defence Review? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yes, that's an extraordinary interview you just played. I've never heard that before, but it's really awful.
Thank God you're not still serving, sir. Made me think that.
Well, we must all take our share of the blame, I suppose. But we're, you know, the long-term defence, long-term cuts to defence, when we thought there was no threat.
Yep.
And hence you got the strategic defence review done by George Robertson and his and Fiona Hill and Richard Barons. And they come up very clearly with a plan for how to get out of the hole we're in. But it all depends on money, which was promised. And as long as the defence investment programme has not been published, actually our defence money is going backwards, not forwards. So we're getting worse.
And that's the same Lord Robertson, of course, who served as a defence secretary under previous Labour administration, secretary general of NATO, and then decided to effectively go public a few weeks ago and reveal that nothing really had been picked up. Where does that leave the current administration, in your view, Major General?
I think you have to go back to the where the government, the original sin of this government, as is widely commented on, was the failure to tackle the welfare bill. And once they admitted defeat on the welfare bill and kowtowed to the their backbenchers, then it meant that the recommendations they'd signed up to in the Strategic Defence Review have basically been ignored. They've been ignored both on the money side and also on the conversation which the government promised. The Prime Minister signed up to having a conversation with the public to make them aware of the whole of society response that was needed, and that would change the whole mood of the country and make them understand why they need to put more money into defence. That conversation hasn't happened, that's why the money hasn't been allocated, and we're in a real mess now.
Noting we are where we are and we're not where we want to be, what needs to happen next, Major General?
Well, unfortunately, we're now stuck in a question of whether we should recognise you're in a hole, and you need to publicise that and convince your people to vote for change. The trouble is that I think that this parliament is, or this government is suffering from what I observed under Tony Blair's government, which was the problems of having a massive majority, because that means that. You're in danger of not controlling your backbenchers. And I don't think that this government is in charge of its own majority, let alone the rest of Parliament. So I'm afraid we're rather stuck. What's really needed is some leadership from the top. And Keir Starmer, as you were just saying, honest guy. I don't believe he's not a bad man, but he just hasn't got the personality to lead us out of this. And I can't honestly see who does have the personality to lead us out of this. But this is a case for real leadership, for really gripping this issue and convincing people it needs doing. And no one's even making the effort to convert the naysayers to put more money into defence.
Lastly, you'll know better than I. You don't build a battleship overnight, or indeed a tank overnight. Surely some of this tracks back to previous Conservative administrations, Major General?
Oh God, absolutely. Yeah, I mean it goes right back. I mean the problem with defence has to be shared across the political spectrum. I mean, if you're going to ask me at what percentage we should use, we should not just go back to the levels of GDP that we had during, say, the Falklands War, when it was about 4%. But you've then got to add on the cost of the nuclear deterrent, which used to be paid by the Treasury, but got subtly slipped into the defence budget by George Osborne. So there was a Conservative government effectively adding another 0.7% of GDP cut to the defence expenditure by adding that expenditure on it. So yeah, this blame is shared across the political spectrum. It is not a party political issue. This is jointly held by both parties.
Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Thanks for your time, sir. Major General Jonathan Shaw, former Assistant Chief of the Defence Staff at the MOD, now a consultant for Mast Security. Jim, you'll be the first caller on that. I hope you can wait until the other side of the news, because then I can give you a good run at it, the lack of our defence capability. And also coming up after the news... Great and small. This as a 2.5-year investigation into the nation's veterinary services industry by the UK's competitive regulator could have backfired, as there's an unintended race to the top in prices. Independent practices now raising their prices to match the large corporate providers. So the last time you needed treatment for your dog, your cat, your rabbit, whatever it might be, have you noticed that those bills have gone up? How much are you paying at the vets? And how much is the veterinary service market worth in the UK? It's a startling figure. You'll find it out after this. 9.30, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister's bringing together leaders from across public life for a summit aimed at tackling anti-Semitism. Sir Keir Starmer will tell the meeting this morning that recent attacks on the Jewish community have turned the issue into a crisis. A man who was shot at a barbecue in Brixton in South London over the bank holiday weekend has died. 25-year-old Keanu Taylor was one of four people injured when shots were fired from a car in the early hours of Saturday. And leading online safety campaigners have told Nick that they're concerned ministers are dragging their feet over new safeguards. The government is currently consulting on an Australian-style social media ban for under-16s, along with other measures. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers possible on higher ground for northern Scotland. A warm day for most, though, a high of 18 degrees.
With rock-bottom approval ratings for the government, this Thursday, voters head to the ballot box to mark Keir Starmer's report card. With his premiership under pressure, how big could the fallout be?
From 10pm, Lewis Goodall.
As the polls close, join me, Lewis Goodall, as we break down what's happening across the country and what it means for politics to come.
From 6am, Nick Ferrari.
What will new governments mean for Scotland and Wales? I'll bring you all the fallout, the biggest names in politics, and importantly, hear your views too.
From 1pm, Sheila Fogarty.
Stay with LBC throughout the day as I bring you the declarations and drama set to shape the country for years to come.
Election Night Live from 10pm this Thursday. Listen and watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Did you know that Tesco does home insurance? And you can get club card prices on the house. What? You didn't know? Shut the front door. Over 500,000 people already have Tesco home insurance, and it was awarded which recommended provider for home insurance in September 2025. See how much you can save with your club card. Search online for Tesco home insurance. Every little helps.
Train to Arundel with my little knights in tiny armour. Off to storm the castle.
Okay, Theo, race you to the top.
Then a look around the gardens for me.
Now, who wants to see some jousting?
Train home. Reading a new book about dragons. That's their bedtime story sorted. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets from London Victoria to Arundel for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Last time you needed treatment for your pet, what, or indeed, I suppose if you're listening to me in a rural area, I don't know, your sheep, your horse, your pigs, I don't know, what sort of prices you have? Have you noticed a real spike in prices? We'll talk about that in just a moment. But Jim's in Cardiff. Jim, we now have one more ship that's been written off after a hugely expensive full re-kit. What was it? £103 million refit 3 years ago. Dear God. What do you make of that? Good morning.
Yeah, I think this is partly to do with the, a lot to do with the 2010 defence review where no ships were ordered.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I'm not sure there were no ships ordered, I'm not sure exactly of the facts, but I think that people have to appreciate it takes 15 or 20 years.
Yes, I did say that to the gentleman.
To get it into the water. And the other thing is, it's a bit rich for George Robertson, who ordered two big aircraft carriers, which were far, far bigger than the ones they replaced, and have completely lopsided our Navy. So whereas we should have lots of frigates and destroyers, which can do the anti-air that we need, we've got these big missile sort of magnets, which can't really be used for what they're supposed to be used anyway.
Is this what's called the peace dividend, Jim? Did we take... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that was it. I think, you know, I'd made my point, really. And we got rid of the anti-submarine planes... Yeah. And then we had to reorder and we lost the capacity to build our own. So we're now dependent on Boeing for getting them in. And they're not easy to deal with. I spoke to the guy who runs the project and he's he says they're not the, the easiest to deal with.
I can imagine. Jim, thank you. That is, we'll take more calls. Zahid, you'll be the next caller on. This is that supposed peace dividend, isn't it? And now, effectively, we get defence, or a lot of it, on the cheap by looking across to the United States and pay the vast amount as regards individual nations' contribution towards NATO. More on that in a moment. Now, if we're talking about vast amount of money, try this on for size. £6.3 billion. That's the value of the nation's veterinary services market. And a two-and-a-half-year investigation run by our competition regulator could, it is feared now, have backfired. Independent practices are seen to be raising prices to match large corporate providers, according to a survey by analysts at Panmure Liberum, the city broker. This could be a result of increased disclosure after the CMA, which is the Competition and Markets Authority, investigation. In March, it published its final report after investigation. The inquiry, as I say, launched 2.5 years ago to look at concerns including prices and transparency. And an initial review prompted an unprecedented 56,000 responses from pet owners. That shows just how live an issue it is. By the way, lockdowns played a role here. Pet ownership rising sharply during lockdown, coinciding with operators, including those owned by private equity firms, buying veterinary practices. Right, enough from that. Let's get into the detail of this. I don't know if I've ever told you, I always wanted to be a vet, but unfortunately I wasn't bright enough, nowhere near bright enough. But man here is Dr. Danny Chambers, is a veterinary surgeon, also the Lib Dem MP for Winchester, so I suppose wearing two hats, as it were. Good to have you on, Doctor. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about vets' prices, and if we go back in time, what is the attraction for, I think, mostly American, but I'm not necessarily, companies to buy up these practices? Why are they doing that? Good morning.
Hi, Mick. Yeah, it's a complete change a few years ago, back in around about the year 2000-ish. You used to have to be a veterinary surgeon to own and run a veterinary practice. And then that was changed so that anyone could own a veterinary practice, even if they weren't a vet. And then a few years after that, other businesses started buying up veterinary practices. But what's been interesting is that over the last decade, there's been a surge in these big corporates buying up veterinary practices. And so over about a period of 10 years, now over 60% of vets are owned by corporates. So rightly, there's been an investigation by the CMA just to see, you know, as prices have gone up and ownership structures have changed so dramatically, whether there is any reason for that. And it turns out it's quite complicated. There's quite a few reasons for it. And the new ownership style of veterinary practice is probably one of them. You know, more people getting pet insurance is probably another. The general prices of running a practice, everything from energy costs and anaesthetic costs have shot up as well, and just like it has for every single other business. And then also what you can do for animals has gone up. You know, it's when I graduated 16 years ago, you know, it's very rare to have an MRI scanner or a CT scanner in a vet practice. It's at university hospitals where you're training. Now many vet practices have them. So that huge combination of things has meant that prices have really shot up.
What's better for the pet? What's better for its owner?
Well, I think high prices, it's probably worth pointing out that it's not good for vets either, because as a vet, having had to euthanize animals because owners cannot afford treatment, that's really upsetting. Oh. You know, we've already got vets with a very high suicide rate, about 4 times the national average.
Is that
you know, the
right?
Mental health stress under vets is high. And you have to remember that the veterinary surgeon standing in front of you is not the person setting the prices either. And so when people come in with a pet that they really care about, and, you know, the ones I remember are the ones that have a real human connection to it as well. So, you know, I remember seeing a horse, and we had to euthanize this horse, but the woman who owned the horse, it was her mother who had bred it, and she had bred this horse at 27 years ago, and she had died since then. And, you know, that's the last big connection with the mother. And so this is so much more than just providing a service or just looking after animal welfare, as important as that is. You know, the emotional investment in these animals is often huge. And so when the prices go up and people cannot afford treatment, it really upsets vets as well. So there's a bit of a narrative that, you know, vets are making a whole load of money out of it. Actually, the prices delivering the service has gone up as well. So the profits aren't increased, but you end up in more of these situations where people can't afford treatment, and it, you know, upsets vets and owners, and it's bad for animal welfare.
Your point is well made. Obviously, the cost of drugs is going up, the cost of all everything else, and the kit. So what could a government do? What should a government do in this field?
Well, I think the CMA investigation is the right thing to do, because when you've had a huge and seismic change in the structure of any industry, it's right that it is looked at in the public interest. I think there are a couple of unintended consequences from it. One of them, vets always offer prescriptions. You can ask for a prescription. If you've got an animal, like a dog, on long-term medication, it's often cheaper to buy it online. And the CMA reiterated this and, you know, said that all practices have to offer these. But as an unintended consequence, all the online pharmacies, or most of them, are owned by the big corporates. So if you go into an independent veterinary practice and they give you a prescription, which the CMA has highlighted as your right, then you go and cash it in online, you're actually making more profit for the corporates, which, when you're trying to increase competition, if you're trying to make independent practices sort of more competitive and more viable, that's actually a bit detrimental, I think.
Do you enjoy it, veterinary work?
I love being a vet. I absolutely love it. I love the animals.
Have you got a mix of rural and urban? What sort of practice have you got?
I did mostly horses. But I grew up on a farm, so I used to do a lot of farm work as well, and then I did quite a lot of dogs and cats as well. What I love is firstly the variety, and secondly, having grown up on a farm but loving science at school, being a vet was perfect for me because I like the science, I like working with the animals, but I really like the human connection. And it's a bit like being in politics, you know. People come to you with a problem, they're often really distressed, and you help them with that, and often in a situation of quite desperate need, and it's very, very satisfying. I absolutely love it.
Just lastly, and I had no idea that the suicide level among your profession is so high. I can imagine that there's a relatively healthy cat or dog that needs a bit of treatment in front of you, and the client says, I just can't afford it. I'm afraid we're going to have it put to sleep. Heartbreak, because you can't take the dog home yourself. It's horrific for you guys and women, isn't it?
It's absolutely heartbreaking. And I was a trustee for 7 years before I got elected of a charity called Vet Life, which looks after the mental health of vets and vet nurses and vet students. And to give you an idea how busy it was, there's about 30,000 vets in the UK, and used to get about 5,000 contacts a year. So it's a really, really busy year. It's a great organisation.
Good luck with what you do. Been joy speaking with you. Thank you. Dr. Danny Chambers is a vet. He's also Lib Dem MP down in Winchester. So how much did you pay the last time you had to pay for some veterinary treatment for your... Well, we're talking about horses, but your cats, your dogs, whatever it might be, we'll come to that. But we're talking defence, and Zahid is in Maribyrn. Thank you for holding, Zahid. You're on the radio. The point you want to make. Good morning.
Yes, the point I'm making is basically...
Hello? Oh, Zahid, can we get him back, poor chap? He's helped. While you're getting him, Derek in North Allerton. Derek, you're on the radio. Zahid's loss is your gain. Go ahead, Derek.
Yes, good morning, Nick.
Morning, sir.
With reference to your recent conversation with the Defence Secretary.
Yes.
I think all ministers come off the same conveyor belt and don't answer tricky questions.
Is it tricky to ask how many ships you've got in the Navy? I would have known.
My main point is... We should be battle-ready 24 hours a day, 52 weeks a year, whether there's any wars on or not.
But we're not.
I know we're not. In reference to that point your previous caller made about the aircraft carriers, if I read correctly, we didn't have the planes to go on them.
I know in the past we haven't had enough diesel to fuel some of our battleships as well. We had to borrow diesel from other places. But this is what they call the so-called peace dividend, of course, Derek. That is the reality here.
Peace? Yeah, unfortunately, the world is not a pleasant place to live in at the present time.
No, I know. But have we been cosseted for too long, lastly?
Well, we've looked over the wall and just sat and did nothing. But never mind, we are what we are.
We are what we are, we are where we are. Derek, thank you. I'm going to take a minute to read. Thank you for that. I'm going to take a minute to read some of the many emails and texts that have come in on other conversations that I haven't done enough to carry them. We talked a lot about online safety. Robert was listening to that interview. Nick, you asked, why isn't the government doing more? Has anyone looked into how much digital advertising is spent per party on social media, particularly targeting that age group? Is the data available? We also talked about the fact that there have been yet more visitors over the weekend, the so-called land grab, this time out in Essex. The previous Easter weekend, we saw it in Hertfordshire and we saw it in Kent. Graham in Bushy, with the speed the travellers built their sites over the weekend, the government should get them to build HS2. It would have been completed within 6 months from start to finish. We also talked about the fact that there is supposedly a growing revolt within the Labour ranks, with Labour MPs demanding a resignation date from Sir Keir Starmer if they're to continue to support him. Mark Sells in Cambridgeshire says, while Labour backbenchers are lobbying Sir Keir for a resignation date, is there any chance they could make it retrospective? Do keep them coming. We'll come to more of your calls as well. It is 9:45. LBC News headlines are read by Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is bringing together leaders from across public life for a summit aimed at tackling anti-Semitism. A man who was shot at a barbecue in Brixton in South London over the bank holiday weekend has died. And online safety campaigners have told LBC that they're concerned ministers are dragging their feet over new safeguards. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK, some wintry showers for northern Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very busy on the M25 both ways. The junction 3 at the M20 after that brief closure. Everything's open now and the delays are beginning to ease. But huge delays on all approaches in Edmonton to the Great Cambridge roundabout. So that's the A10 and the North Circular Road. There's a problem on the junction roundabout. In Oxshott, Warren Lane is partially blocked both ways and that's causing queues. No Gatwick Express trains running from the airport to Brighton. It's because of an ongoing investigation, which also means that southern trains aren't running and Thameslink between Three Bridges and Haywards Heath, and Southern also can't run between Watford Junction and Shepherd's Bush. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Northern and Central lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Am I actually going mad? Or did Keir Starmer receiving some free spectacles and a suit from an old friend get 10 million times more coverage than Nigel Farage's 5 million quid?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At Tesco, we know that right now, every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials, so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See tesco.com/Aldi Price Match.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Mr. and Little Miss are back in Happy Meal and they're off on a road trip. Your little one can go somewhere exciting with Little Miss Brave. Laugh all the way there with Mr. Tickle or make up an adventure all of their own. On this road trip, anything's possible. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 8th of June from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy while stocks last, subject to availability.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees. Like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
At Wickes, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Ends Wednesday. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's defence you want to talk about. Let's pick up on some of the emails again before I just get the next caller up. Coming to you, Azar, we got him back. Zahid, coming to you in a moment, sir. David Vasey, with regard to defence, we must look at Iran and Ukraine. The next defence generation is missile defence, along with drone technology and small nimble boats. David, Mr. Vasey, you're probably right, but remember how much concern there was that we couldn't scramble a frigate down to Cyprus. I do think we are, yes, we are, but we're going to need some conventional kit as well. Howard says, for many years we directed the peace dividend into the foreign aid budget, probably on the assumption this would reduce attacks on the UK. Unfortunately, the expert politicians didn't realise where the next threat was actually coming from, and we need a reality check. A lot of people want to have their say on that, but let's get into the callers. Zahid, we've got you back. The point you want to make, Zahid, hello.
Yes. Basically, I think what we've got wrong is that there needs to be a policy review. The Strategic Defence Review was what it was. It was for a particular situation, a particular geopolitical alignment, a unipolar world, etc., etc. Now, with the regional shift taking place, we need to review what do we require military force for. We are not part of Europe anymore.
Well, we are part of NATO, Zahid.
Yes, we are part of NATO, but look at the US, threatening to pull out of NATO. So there is a policy realignment. There is a political realignment, global political realignment taking place. We can't be preparing to fight a war in the 21st century with 20th century mindset.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a change of the strategy to suit that policy. But in the first instance, that policy has to be framed.
Let's talk a little bit about how the time frame or the mindset has to change. What changes need to be made, in your view?
Well, effectively, what needs to be done is we need to see, do we need to go and secure the Falklands again? Do we need to project power to secure area? Or do we need to keep our economic interests alive, keep the lines of communication secure, as in case of the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, what do you think needs to be done? I think most people would agree with you. We have had defence on the cheap. We're not spending enough on it. We now live in a very threatening and hostile world. So clearly something's got to give. What would you specifically do, Zahid?
Essentially, what needs to be done is forget about tanks. Who needs to go and invade another country? We don't need tanks. We need to project air power. We need drones. We need to be able to have ground assault troops where needed.
Isn't the reality in military terms, if you take land or you want to defend land, you've got to have the infantry?
Yeah. You have to have the infantry. And now we've got a very clear objective in the island of Kharg. But can we take it? Right. We can't take it for the simple reason that you need to have lines of communication, supply routes open, air power, artillery, everything else to go with it. So it is not really an objective anymore. And that is what I mean when I say that it's the 20th century mindset fighting a war in the 21st century.
Zahid, I'm glad we got you on a better line. Thank you. Let's talk vets' prices. Jane, coming to you in just a moment. Ian and Bishop Stortford, I paid £76 for two written prescriptions so I can buy £54 worth of drugs online. It's a total rip-off. You don't tell me what sort of animal that was. I had to pay £1,500 to drain an abscess on my daughter's rabbit's cheek. The option was £1,500 to drain or £500 to euthanise. We couldn't bring ourselves to choose to euthanise Scruffy with our daughter stood next to us, so we coughed up the £1,500. Oh, my goodness. The rabbit died anyway. £1,500. Jane's in Essex. Jane, I understand you're a vet.
That's right. Hello, thanks for having me on.
You must be very bright.
Well, maybe.
I think you are, because I could hardly spell veteran surgeon. I so wanted to be a vet.
There we go. I guess it's every young kid's dream if they've grown up on a farm or what have you, but thank you, I'm blushing now.
Did you grow up on a farm?
I did, yes.
What was on the farm?
Cattle, couple of goats, but mainly cattle and a few horses.
Was this down in Oz?
No, yes, that's right. Yeah, New South Wales.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh boy, that's a fair bit of land to have there.
Yeah.
So now you're in Essex and you're vetting. How's it going? How long have you been in UK?
About 27 years.
And a vet? What? When you arrived here, or you trained in the UK?
No, I trained at Sydney Uni.
You trained at Sydney. Okay.
Yep.
If you stay in touch with friends and contacts in Australia, how different, how similar are the two veterinary markets from the UK and Oz?
It is getting worse over in Australia, I believe. There's plenty of evidence that the corporate holders is strangling some of the independent vet clinics in Australia.
They're eyeing a lucrative market, aren't they? Like they did here in the
UK. Absolutely, and I think it's I think there's a massive corruptive, extortionate issue carrying on through the UK.
I just want to say what I said to that other vet 20 minutes or so ago. You're obviously having to pay more for your drugs, aren't you? And you're keeping animals alive at a time when perhaps when you first started training, Jane, back in Sydney, there's no way that you'd have just looked at the owner and said, I'm terribly sorry, your cat, your dog has got to go.
Yeah, I think though that the corporates, one thing that Danny on the he was a vet beforehand, spoke about was that, you know, the costs are going up, but I think there's been one thing that the CMA hasn't really been focusing on, and that is that the corporates do set the protocols that the vets, the young vets, have to follow. And I think there's a lot of training in the universities that try and insist that the young vets give gold standard care. And gold standard care is not necessary for, well, unless, of course, you're paying in gold bullion, or you've got an insurance policy that can be harvested. And that's what it comes down to. You know, we're told by our directors to meet certain targets. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly unfair when you're faced with for instance, a cat with a classic cat bite abscess, for instance, that comes in. It could be just lanced, flushed, and off you go. But no, we're told, we have to do, multimodal analgesia, bring the cat in for a general anaesthetic, professionally treated under anaesthetic, and then you're up for a bill for £1,300. And the cat could come in with the same cat fight abscess 2 weeks later because a moggy down the street has bitten it on the face.
What's better for the cat? Surely to use, lance and for flush out, I think was your expression. Surely it's better for the cat just to do it quickly.
Absolutely, and I do really believe that, you know, it's not in the best interest of the animal. It's really looking at the client and how much you can harvest an insurance policy out of them. I just feel very strongly about it. There was a classic case a few months ago that I was involved in, and it was an elderly dog with a heart murmur. The owner had already said that she didn't want the dog to be put under anaesthetic, and yet it came in with a wart, a simple little wart, like any one of us might have a mole or a wart or something that was troublesome. It started bleeding, and the dog was licking at it. It could have been taken off with local anaesthetic for in a half hour procedure that might have cost £60 to £100. That owner was given an estimate of £950 because it had to be done under anaesthetic, and they wouldn't offer any other option.
Is the answer independent vets, Jane, when you can?
Well, I guess competitively they know that they can put their prices just lower than the corporates, but they're still making that money. And I think I need to appeal to all the vets out there that there are other ways of doing things other than, you know, the gold standard. Not every animal needs a CT scan.
No.
You know, but we sort of say, oh, Mrs. Harrison, if you want the best for your animal, I would seek to people to seek a second opinion from vets, because there are other vets out there that say, right, there are three or four options. You don't have to. It's not always the most expensive option is the best option in the best interest of the animal.
Jane, I must make that the last word. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks for the work you do, and perhaps a lifting of the lid, as it were, a little bit on the whole practice. You had the last word of the day. If you missed any of the show, listen back on the Free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien, the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. As you know, my relationship with AI is it's very much in the early stages at the moment. I do find myself wondering sometimes, would it be possible to do this or to do that? Could we make a sort of chart of all the people in the British media who are paid for their hot takes and opinions and compare what they had to say about Keir Starmer getting some spectacles from a member of his own party, a Labour member of the House of Lords, and Nigel Farage receiving you might want to sit down for this, £5 million in an undisclosed personal donation from a cryptocurrency billionaire, set to become even richer if Farage follows through on his policy pledges regarding cryptocurrency.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, senior figures from policing, culture and business are meeting in Downing Street this morning to discuss efforts to tackle anti-Semitism. Sir Keir Starmer is renewing his call for the whole of society to stand with Jewish communities following recent attacks. Last week, two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green in North London. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more details from Downing Street.
Keir Starmer will say that the attacks on British Jews are a crisis for all of us and a test of our values as he pushes for action to tackle anti-Semitism at its root. Leaders from business, health and education sectors will all be here to meet with him this morning. Fraser Knight, LBC, Downing Street.
Iran's foreign minister says America risks being dragged back into a quagmire with its latest plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Donald Trump's so-called Operation Freedom aims to ensure commercial ships can use the vital oil route. The US president has also warned that any attacks on US ships will result in Iran being blown off the face of the earth. A man who was shot at a barbecue in Brixton in South London over the bank holiday weekend has died. 25-year-old Keanu Taylor was one of four people injured when shots were fired from a vehicle in the early hours of Saturday. No arrests have been made. 149 people are still stranded on a cruise ship in the Atlantic Ocean, which has been hit by a rare rat-borne virus. Three people have died following the outbreak of hantavirus on the vessel, which was sailing from Argentina to Cape Verde. And online safety campaigners have told LBC that they're concerned ministers are dragging their feet over new safeguards. The government is currently consulting on an Australian-style social media ban for under-16s, along with other measures. Speaking to LBC this morning, campaigner Lauren Cowell accused the government of waffling on the issue.
Why are we waiting any longer? We have all of the evidence. We have enough evidence. We've got bereaved, over 27 bereaved families in this country alone who have suffered the ultimate consequences and devastation of what can happen with the, what we know online. And so with that, with all the health professionals and the frontline medical professionals who are doing research every day in this topic, why are we waiting?
Ministers say they're committed to new restrictions but must make sure they work before bringing in any changes. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 80 points at 10,283. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK. Some wintry downpours possible on higher ground for northern Scotland. A warm day for most, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Aldi, we think low prices are for everyone. And boy, do we mean everyone. You... Your nan, your cockapoo, your ex-situationship, Barbara from next door, traffic wardens, Piers Morgan, even that annoying guy James from finance. Yep, low prices should be enjoyed by all, not just those with a membership, what's it? So Aldi don't do one. No points, no cards, no faff. Aldi, which cheapest supermarket, even without a loyalty thingy?
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten, and you can tell I had a good weekend. I hope you did as well, by the way. Long weekend indeed, because I found myself sort of tilting at a windmill this morning that might sometimes seem a little bit too big or too fanciful. I am a member of the British media. I don't think that needed a spoiler alert or will come as a major shock to anybody. I am currently talking to you from behind a microphone in a studio and presenting what I think is the most popular speech-based programme on commercial radio in the United Kingdom. So I'm not just a member of the British media, I am a relatively... what would the word be? Prominent player in some ways, according to whichever measures you prefer. That's not a boast. That's not an opinion. Altogether now, that's counting. But there are days when I find myself contemplating current affairs, which is, after all, the meat and drink of what we do together every morning and what I get paid to pontificate upon. I find myself contemplating current affairs and wondering whether I am part of some Truman Show-style social experiment. It doesn't happen very often, and I'm conscious of the role that biases play from both ends of the telescope. I have biases. I have prejudices. I'm certain of it. I hope I don't have bigotries, but it's perfectly possible. And that doesn't exclude or preclude me from pointing out the hideous bigotries and biases elsewhere in our world, in our politics, and in our media. But there is only so far a bias can go. Right? That there is only so far a bias can go. And it's not enough some mornings to simply say, well, that's the way it goes. That's the way that bias has taken us. Because sometimes you look at a story or a juxtaposition of stories, a combination of stories, a coverage, and you just wonder whether you are actually part of something truly hideous. And listen, while I'm running through my CV, I don't just present a radio program. I've also written a book which essentially examines how on earth you create an ecosystem in which a population can be persuaded to vote epically and repeatedly against its own interests. It's called How They Broke Britain, and it's probably due a sequel. So I'm not ignorant of the forces that could be loosely described as oligarch media or vested interests or, violently effective lobby groups pretending to be think tanks while refusing to reveal where all that money is coming from. But even that, I mean, I suppose what I'm very cautiously suggesting to you is I'm more qualified than the average bear to answer the question that I'm about to ask you, but there are days when I can't answer it. There are days when my answers don't seem to be adequate. They don't seem to go far enough. In May of 2023, Keir Starmer received some spectacles, quite expensive designer glasses, to the tune of £2,485 from a colleague who happens to be a very rich member of the House of Lords. His wife also got some free clothes. This in preparation for the imminent election campaigns. And we joined in the criticism of this, although I hope, and I perish the days when the internet started doing viral clips, because if I did get a bit hysterical about it, you're going to be able to remind me in a moment. In May of 2024, forgive me, he received these glasses before becoming Prime Minister. And the world, I think you will remember, went a little bit mad, didn't it? The world went a little bit mad. The outrage, the fury with which this revelation was greeted by, I would like to say some, but I'm going to say almost all quarters of the British media. You can pick your favourite. If you want, you can think of somebody now who went absolutely bonkers about Keir Starmer getting some spectacles, getting gifted some spectacles by a parliamentary colleague who happened to be much richer than him. And you can probably measure on a scale of 1 to 10 how absolutely bonkers these people went. I turn your attention next to a story that I hope you're aware of, but which, if you're not, I get it. I completely understand how you have managed not to be aware of the following story. Nigel Farage, the leader of Reform UK, was given £5 million. £5 million. Not his party. Not his organisation, not his structure, not his last party or the one before that, but him. Current account territory. A £5 million personal gift. And he was given it, The Guardian reported last week, shortly before announcing that he would stand in the 2024 British general election after all, having previously insisted that he wouldn't. What's going on?